Before we get to Mike Bloom on the Survivor Feedback Show, settle in. It's going to be a long one with Mike as we run through everything for the final Survivor episode of the regular season before the finale. I've got the First Lady of Podcasting here with me to talk about one of our sponsors here today, and that is ForHers.com. ForHers is the new women's wellness brand delivering prescription skincare products customized for you straight to your door. Nicole, why do women need prescription skincare?
Because some of us aren't born with perfect skin, and we don't like waiting for a dermatology appointment.
Yes, I had no idea.
It's true. We don't always, I don't wake up like this.
No more taking time out of your day for yet another in-person doctor appointment or a long pharmacy line. You have to deal with that?
Yeah.
So, I had, like, how long? Like
a pharmacy line?
Yeah.
They can be really long sometimes. What I hate the most,
see, I would hate that,
is when you get like an acne breakout and you go to call the doctor and the doctor's like, yeah, we'll see you in 2 months. Oh, great.
And what do you do?
You have to wait.
You have to wait?
Mm-hmm.
ForHers says, forget about that. They connect you online with licensed doctors who can prescribe you prescription products customized for you, delivered straight to your door at every age. Skin begins to adjust. Hers is dedicated to supporting women at each age of these stages of life so that our skin concerns can become a no-brainer. It's not about us needing to change something about our face. It's about finally receiving products that address your needs, wrinkles, sunspots, uneven skin textures, enlarged pores, acne, melasma, all concerns that can be addressed with science, products with active ingredients found at a dermatologist's office. Hers finally is here to bring these science-based prescription skincare products that fight the core root of your skin needs that won't break the bank. If it's not prescription skincare, you're just applying marketing to your face. To order now, listeners get a free trial month of the customized anti-aging kit from Hers for 20% off right now while supplies last. See the website for full details. This would cost hundreds of dollars if you went to the doctor or the pharmacy. Go to forhers.com, forhers.com/Rob. That's forhers, forhers.com/Rob, forhers/Rob. Nicole, thank you so much.
Oh, thank you. You know, I love my skincare.
Coming to you live from my apartment, it's Rob Has a Podcast. And now here's the guy who had to be talked out of preparing a Brant steal between the 18 votes that Christian received in Survivor David vs. Goliath. I'm Rob Cesternino. Hey, everybody. How's it going? Very excited for this episode of the podcast because we're going to be talking to a man who is a staple here at the end of the season. You know it's time to start to celebrate the Survivor finale when we bring in our own...
I think we have a Goliath in bloom.
Our own Goliath in bloom. Please welcome the co-host of the RHAP, B&B. Give it up for Mr. Mike Bloom.
Should I, like, divest that title, considering how the actual Goliath and Bloom ended up doing on Survivor? Do I want to sort of disavow my association since the pre-merge?
Maybe you were the Goliath and Bloom.
Wow. So maybe that was Jeff trying to get through me via Dan. Dan was just sort of like the corollary, the meat body to work the message
meat
through.
Meat body?
I, on the other hand, was a man whore. Look, Brahm, I'm a father now, okay? We can't be that lurid anymore. It needs to be appropriate for this.
Needs
to be fetus appropriate.
Okay. All right. So, Michael, I'm so excited to have you back here with me. I did have to be talked out of potentially simulating a Brant Steele season for you, featuring the 18 votes cast against Christian playing in a three-tribe season.
My money would probably be on the one vote that Allison cast for him that said, I believe, Professor Hubicki on it, just because it seemed very omniscient in that we're going to be talking about Professor Hubicki actually hosting a session at Ponderosa. I think that sense of a game really portends well for someone who enters the game amidst a bunch of other votes that look similar.
Yeah, we weren't going to go through the whole thing blow by blow, but we would have got to the final three and maybe just talked about what the final three jury arguments were going to be. But we're not going to do that.
I don't know if I want pieces of paper doing a fire-making contest, personally. That seems like a lawsuit waiting to happen.
We don't have time for that because we have so much to get to here with Mike Bloom coming off of another great season of the RHAP B&B with Liana Boris, also podcasting about everything going on RuPaul's Drag Race, Top Chef. Mike, what am I missing?
Lots of random other shows here and there. I've been getting into a lot of writing lately, in addition to the exit interviews I do with Parade and for Parade, for Survivor and Big Brother, Amazing Race, Top Chef. I've gotten into doing some Star Trek Discovery writing for a Hollywood Reporter. I like this. I like doing plugs at the top of the show. I'm sure people tune my voice out at a certain point.
Well, so just in case people are like, who is this Mike Bloom? I've never heard of him before. Who is this? What is this voice? I've never heard this.
Yes, and they're going to say, oh, I don't like that voice. Maybe I don't want to listen to that voice anymore.
No, okay. Because, look, we probably have a lot to say today, and who knows how many people are going to make it to the end. So we'll get the plugs out of the way here at the top of the show, because we have so much to do, Mike, as we are now just days away from the Survivor David versus Goliath finale. I know you've been enjoying this season so much. How do you feel going into this finale?
Yeah, I mean, it's really tough for me to sort of add any input onto this season overall, in addition to all the great stuff that your guests have provided. I actually do sort of want to veer a bit off the path as we do and actually focus the conversation on something that I know Andy Denhart highlighted from a quote from Jeff Probst that he gave to Dalton Ross about season 37 that might sort of, you know, segue into a conversation as to why things in this season feel so different in a good way compared to maybe the past couple of instances, where Jeff basically talked about, you know, during filming on season 37, I asked myself the question, why do we make the show? And I was surprised with the answer, because I thought we made it for the audience. But as I continued to write, I realized, no, we make it for the 20 people who play. We put all of our time and energy, we leave our families, we endure our own cyclones and miserable boat rides too soon, and long days in the jungle, so that we can give these 20 people an adventure that may change the rest of their life. And it was really eye-opening to me. And the byproduct is, if you're not playing, you can watch it at home for the entertainment value, or the inspiration to get up off the couch and come play it next season.
Hmm.
So basically Jeff gave this quote that he had his own little come to Jesus moment, for lack of a better term, over the course of season 37, that he realized that they were essentially making the game for the players as opposed to the fans. I think he's been on record in previous interviews saying, like, oh yeah, we make the show for all the people watching it back home. Now, knowing most of the final product that came out of it, specifically from the production side, do you feel like we're seeing that attitude come out in the work that has happened over these 13 episodes?
I don't know. I don't know what to do with that. It almost makes it sound like that Survivor is some sort of Willy Wonka's chocolate factory, and there are people that are sort of like brought here to either learn life lessons that will ultimately, you know, one person is going to get the deed to the chocolate factory, and the other people are going to sort of like have their lives, really affected in a negative way by their actions and their sins on the island. So I don't know if you want to say he's more of a Jacob from Lost, and then we're also filming it for the people back home. It's a little Black Mirror.
I mean, yeah, it's a little bit of like, let's, you know, subject these people to a form of misery, expose who they are as people truly deep down.
For all the world to see.
I like this Willy Wonka thing, though, because it does sort of bring to mind this idea that when Jeff does those post-tribal council comments, are they not that akin to like what the Oompa Loompas do sometimes in terms of life lessons?
Yeah, like Augustus Gloot just like floated down the river, and it's like, well, one naughty kid just went down the drain. Six nice kids remain. What will happen next? I can't
Oompa
wait.
Loompa, Doompity Idol Nullifier.
Yeah. They make the show for the contestants. I feel like a lot of the contestants would disagree with that.
Yeah. I mean, listen, these are not testimonials from the contestants themselves, but I guess that's sort of Jeff's view, however accurate it may be. I just find it so interesting because the things that we've been hearing most recently in Josh's interview with Matt Van Wagenen was, you know, Jeff went to the editing team personally this season and said, let's find a different way to tell the story. I wonder if that was spurred on at all by him saying, we're going to talk about, you know, instead of maybe overarching narratives of a few people where the other people come in as side characters, maybe we try to provide a template where, again, this is for the players, we're going to try to tell each person's story. And as a result, I think we've ended up with one of the most evenly edited seasons in quite some time.
Yeah, it's I don't know if you could put your finger on exactly one thing, but I think that this is a thing that I think that Jeff I think has gotten dinged or binged in the past for, of, you know, really looking to, you know, have these story moments with the contestants and maybe pushing or like trying to get it out of a moment where it's not necessarily there. But for whatever reason, it's really worked in this season.
Yeah, well, I mean, it also helps that the story itself is sort of inherent in the theme. I think Jeff says in, what, the first 5 minutes of the season, like, this is one of the biggest, you know, rivalries in history, fictional or real. And so with that skeleton already built, he can then sort of string those muscles and organs into it and build the human out, as opposed to saying, okay, let's sort of grab whichever bones we want to and assemble a human based on that.
Well, I've talked a lot about this season in terms of, as these players approach the final tribal council, they shouldn't be thinking about a resume, but they should be thinking about the story. And that, you know, that's how we as human beings make sense of things, that it has to be a story that we can understand. And so in terms of having this theme in David versus Goliath, and a theme that's worked so well, and we take a look at the other themes throughout the show's history that have also worked well, like heroes versus villains. Again, heroes versus villains is a story. And so you could sort of, like, the theme makes sense around in terms of trying to put it together, where something like heroes versus healers versus hustlers is not a story. It's just a group of things.
No, Rob, you do not remember the clear Jets Sharks-like rivalries that occur between heroes, healers, and hustlers. I mean, firefighters cannot even step foot in a hospital sometimes without some additional blood being shed.
And even brains versus beauty versus brawn, at least the first time around, I think that there's a little bit of like a story, like that's a thing, brains versus beauty, or, you know, brains versus brawn, at least beauty sort of just got tacked in there. And for the most part, they weren't really a big part of the story. But, you know, I feel like that's the thing. So I think that maybe as Survivor tries to think of these themes, Ghost Island is not a story.
Yeah, I mean, it was a story. It was an airplane that they were trying to build as they flew, to the point where we were saying, like, okay, wait, what are the rules of Ghost Island? Is there, okay, sometimes there's a game, sometimes there's not even a game available, sometimes you can choose to not play the game at all. And I guess we got a little bit of taste of that. We got mini Ghost Island this episode as well. So it just sort of takes us back to, again, maybe some more hard-lined, bold-faced stories and things that are a bit more, like Allison talks about with the dynamics this episode, a bit more fluid and harder to pin down.
Okay, Mike, we've got so much to talk about here today. I guess, why don't we start talking about Christian, who was really, at times, the face of Survivor David versus Goliath along the way here. He is out of the game now at 7. You had the opportunity to speak to him in your exit press, as did I. What was your takeaway from your conversation with Christian?
I mean, it was a bit more subdued, maybe because I was thinking about, like, I was just trying to imagine Christian doing his wild gesticulations while it was happening to really make, you know, the full picture. But he was still, as you know, very well spoken. I will say I admire him for, like, keeping a really great sense of vocabulary despite being at the peak of malnutrition. Like, I'm pretty sure if I was out there, I have a warped sense of dictionary as it is, but I feel like I would lose all perspicacity by like day 7 and just sort of be, you know, sending out like garbled grunting noises as try ways to communicate with people. So it was really nice to just, I mean, I love Christian as a person. And again, people are sort of talking about the fact that maybe he comes off a bit extra in the way he behaves on the island. I think you and I can attest to the fact, like, when we talk to him, that extraness still shone through. He's just that as a person. And I also give him credit for highlighting the own foibles in his game as well. He's an ultra analytical person in general, so I'm sure he has spent many a sleepless night thinking about all these junctures where he could have made a different decision and the circuit would have connected differently. But he came in, you know, ready to mull all that over and say, you know what, I was wrong in some places, but I wear it as a badge of honor that I got, you know, the second most votes ever cast in the game.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and I think that he, you know, he's very humble about the whole experience, which I think is positive. And it's hard to sort of walk the line between humble and, you know, sickeningly self-deprecating. That's, you know, a tough tightrope to walk, I have learned in my life. So he does a good job with that. And I'm interested to know from you, Mike, what is the legacy of Christian's impact on the game going to be?
On the game is an interesting thing, because I guess, you know, we post Karamoan, there was a lot of talk about, like, you even talked about this, even with, like, Big Brother, for instance, of, okay, a nerdy winner like Cochran, has he screwed other nerd archetypes from now on, where people will say, okay, usually we can, you know, we can disregard the meek, but as the Bible said, the meek inherited in a couple of instances. And I wonder if Christian is the most stark example since Karamoan of that actually happening, where people were realizing this guy is too charismatic. This guy has this affability about him that comes from his quirkiness, and he could legitimately win this thing, which is a reason why, again, he doesn't understand still why he was targeted, but he was targeted en masse, which I don't think on paper, if I told you at the beginning of the season, he would be the main target over people like Dan and John Hennigan. I think you would blanch at that idea. It's sort of in disbelief at it all. I think maybe this shows that this archetype has sort of now been thrust into the spotlight as something a bit more dangerous, even after someone like Cochran won.
The next person in this archetype, in this lineage of Cochran and Christian, is this person in Early Boot?
I mean, Early Boot is always interesting because, I mean, in another world, if Christian doesn't get an opportunity to solve that puzzle, lickety-split, who knows, maybe he would have been on the chopping block. He acknowledged the fact that, you know, I was super scared that I would be weak to begin with. So maybe it comes all the way back around to someone like Skinny Ryan, who, you know, got targeted at the very beginning for being weak. And now you add on to it the stigma that, okay, they could be threatening as well. They're extremely well-spoken. So, I mean, in terms of gameplay, that's what I'm thinking of. In terms of a character, I feel like his legacy is a lot bigger. You know, I know that there are, again, there are detractors, but I think that he is such a unique character and a pretty universally liked. It's tough to say. I don't think anyone's universally liked out there with the exception
of,
like,
say it, Mike.
Well, I think with the exception of, like, Suri and Ethan Zahn, like, I feel like all the other survivors in the internet, there was
always
Denise
Stapley.
Yeah. And Denise Stapley. She's a staple of the well-liked community But I feel like he,
Kim Spradlin's in the top five.
Yeah. Though, again, it's the internet. You'll always have somebody speak up and raise their hand Shireen like and say, well, I'm not a big fan of them. So, but I feel like, of, you know, characters in the past few seasons, I do feel like Christian has the biggest thumbs up to thumbs down ratio, which yes, just proves as to, like, how uniquely weird of a character he was overall. The thing that I've sort of been mulling over in my head that I'd love to ask you is, I mean, how do you rate his game? Do you think we heard his name so often, and he was such an epicenter of everything narratively, but I think when push comes to shove, what did you think of him as a player?
As a player, I think that there was more good than bad. I know that people have been super critical of him at times. I do still question the Carl move. I think that that was too early to make that swing in the game. And, you know, we'll hear him talk about in a moment that he, you know, his goal was to try to make the game as crazy as possible. But I think that even to try to make things as crazy as possible, I think that he was sort of looked at as a person who was sort of pulling the strings in terms of making things as crazy as possible, maybe to the point where, you know, with everything going on against the Goliaths, that maybe he, like, where he did not have a ton to do with sort of like saving himself or the idol nullifier, but maybe he was looked at as part of the brains of the operation.
Yeah, and I think part of that does come from appearance and perception / perspective. It's sort of word from him in that regard. The thing about Christian for me that I find so interesting is, I mean, he says in the beginning of his Ponderosa that social game is a ubiquitous term. I feel like even
ubiquitous.
Yeah, I'm surprised he missed the opportunity to do that. But again, 35 days in, you know, the puns can sort of go in one ear and out the other there. But it's, you know, it's so surprising to me how it's such a fluid term that we still haven't really nailed down what it means 37 seasons in. And what I will say about Christian's social game, which I think was his strongest part, is I think he's just naturally charismatic and, you know, good to get along with. But I feel like there was something maybe missing from his social game in terms of turning that charisma into actionable items, especially compared to someone like Mike White, who I'm sure we'll get into the course of this episode, where you can see, you know, what he did this episode with him saying, I have good connections with everybody. Let me utilize that in order to get what I want done. I feel like that's an example of, you know, how people traditionally define social game in a manner of doing it strategically. Christian's more on the social game side of, like, he's easy to get along with, and when juries sometimes vote on people they like more, he's an absolute shoo-in. But he didn't necessarily maybe, you know, buy into that second part of saying, okay, now that I get along with everybody, let me put a big plan into action.
Okay, Mike, let's talk a little bit about this, because this week in the Survivor Ponderosa, we saw Christian trying to at least have some takeaways from this Survivor experience that he had. And so what I'd like to do, and not everybody has seen all the videos, is I want to play a little bit of what went on at the Ponderosa when Christian was there. And then you and I can sort of talk through a little bit of what's going on here. This is from the Survivor Ponderosa video with Christian at Ponderosa.
So today, you know, we have all this wonderful downtime at Ponderosa, and now that we have food in our bellies and we can think about what happened, you know, say ponder it all, you know.
Now, is that intentional? Is ponder it all,
yes,
at Ponderosa?
He got the food in his belly. He missed Ubiquitous, so he's going to make up for it tenfold with ponder at Ponderosa.
Yes. And so Christian has a big whiteboard and magic markers and has pulled the whole jury together for a workshop in what's going on Survivor. So let's eavesdrop a little bit on what's going on at this workshop.
Are we shadowing his class?
Yes.
I'll get everyone together and sort of bat around ideas in an open academic setting in Fiji. I want to have stimulate like a really engaging discussion about what Survivor's all about.
This is the science of Survivor.
Okay, the science of Survivor, Mike. Are you taking this as an elective after you get through advanced negotiations?
I mean, after I take advanced negotiations about three more times, because I can't get enough of that stuff, I'd probably enroll in it. You know, this does feel like, I mean, I feel like Max Dawson might be a bit offended. I feel like he had this market cornered until Christian took over. So there might be a rivalry now. But this would totally be like 20. Actually, I would say that initially 21-year-old Mike Bloom would have enrolled in this course lickety-split. But also 21-year-old Mike Bloom was very closeted about his Survivor fandom. So he might have enrolled under Mr. X instead to like shadow the course.
Yeah. Could we have anybody else on the faculty at Survivor University, Mike?
Bob Crowley needs to be there.
Yeah, he's got the very professorial look.
I guess could Nick Yadanza come in as like the hip foreign teacher as well?
Yeah, sure. He could teach poetry.
Yeah, exactly. Steven can be his TA or his occasional sub. Randy. Oh, we got to get Randy in there. He's finally passed his certification exam. No, you know what? I'm going to make Randy the principal.
He would be a good principal.
I think you would have a Debbie from Survivor Token Change can be his vice principal, because I'm pretty sure, I feel bad, she actually was a principal, so I accidentally promoted Randy above someone who was actually qualified for the job.
Any other openings on the faculty, Mike?
We'll see. There has to be like one like Defense Against the Dark Arts position that just comes increasingly vacant. And speaking of the Harry Potter comparisons, Rupert has to be the groundskeeper.
Groundskeeper Rupert.
Groundskeeper Rupert. But his only solution is to just dig holes. I think we're really assembling like the Survivor U staff here.
And Brendan Shapiro could teach some sort of athletics.
Yes, he could be the PE teacher, him or Nyanka.
Well, yeah, this is really downgraded from we were started at a college and now this is like a middle school.
Listen, we're all in one. The Survivor community is not that well funded, so not enough SIA money is going into the education fund here in Survivor Land. So we have to sort of pool all the kids together. So you know what? Yes, 20-year-olds are playing dodgeball with kindergartners. What of it? They're going to learn life lessons.
Okay, let's go back to Professor Hibiki's class.
Here's a neat problem. Survivor's a really hard game.
That is a neat problem.
I mean, super neat. Yeah, Monica Culpepper type of neat, which means not a very fun one.
Also, I love that the setup here for the Survivor class that they're taking is this dry erase board, which is like mounted on a thing that also has like a kayak.
Well, can we I'm also talk about
or
the
a paddle board, maybe. I'm sorry. Sorry, Brenda Lowe.
And you did say that, you know, oh, the jury is there. Two people are not there.
Yeah.
And the thing that I love about this, I love so many things about this, but one of the things I love about this is each juror's sort of reaction to the lecture just speaks volumes as to probably yeah, who they yeah. were as a student. And you know that John and Dan were the people that totally slept through their 8 a.m. class, even though they signed up for it and hoped to just sort of get notes from someone later because they are completely absent.
This might be the only time that John Hennigan can sleep because we've seen in all these yes. other Ponderosa videos where everybody goes and wakes him up. So he's like, finally, everybody is leaving me alone. I can go and take a nap. Now, there was a moment. There was like a shot where Christian was talking with John and Dan. Like he like seems like he brought the dry erase board to them. So they're like on like scholarship, like they're like getting like their own sort of, they don't have to show up for class. There's sort of
like that. I love this idea of Christian, like, I'm assuming like stalking all the jurors with this dry erase board in tow, just sort of dragging it around Ponderosa.
Also, they have him like in a sweater with like a collared shirt underneath in Fiji. Like God knows how hot he must have been.
Well, that's also probably the outfit that he picked, but he also lost like what, like 15 pounds. So he looks like he came out of someone's basement and was taught to, and he said, all right, time to get back in the classroom.
Right. Like he was like a grown up professor that went into the big machine and then wished to be a kid again.
You love making big references. I noticed
love
that
it.
As a
I do love it. All right. Back to Professor Hibiki.
And we all go into it sort of like with our own, you know, reasons as to what you think would work. You know, do you build this tight alliance that won't break and take people out to the end? Or what I was trying to do is just make it so crazy that hopefully eventually people wouldn't target me. Look, you know, look where.
By the way, the look on Carl's face, he does not seem thrilled to be in class.
Oh, I love this because the best one is by far Gabby, who is actually writing.
Yeah, Gabby's way into it. Gabby's got like the notebook and she's scribbling along. And
yes.
Elizabeth and Alec, they don't really know what to make of it yet at this point.
Yeah, I mean, no offense to Alec. I love him, but I doubt the man has touched a pencil in his life. So I just don't think the academic setting is right for him.
Wait, you don't think he like took like drink orders or anything?
No, it's all up in his head. But there is a moment. There's a moment later where, you know, when he starts talking about variants, and yeah. I feel like I'm projecting here. I feel like Alec wasn't paying attention whatsoever. But then Gabby starts making this reaction and he just sort of like, you know, when you zone out and someone in the crowd has a big reaction, and you sort of go along with it to pretend that you're listening.
Yeah.
I feel like Alec did that. He's like, oh, variants.
Here,
yeah,
we'll get there.
Course.
We'll get there. Hold on. Slow down, Mike.
I'll try
for me,
not to.
I wanted to learn something about Survivor that I didn't know before. So we have, you know, and this can be new strategies. And I sort of see that as something a single player can do. What would Carl do? What's a struggle strategy for Carl, you know, for himself to maximize his chance of winning the game? Also, you know, for Jeff, this is for Jeff too, because if he puts a new twist in the game, if I know, if you know something about how it's going to work, like we're talking about this, Carl. Your idol nullifier. Is that good for the game or bad for the game? It's great that you found it.
Bing.
Because you're able to turn around on the Goliaths. So there's variance in how well it performs, right? But if the same thing happened every season on Survivor, how interesting is that?
I would not watch it.
You would not watch it.
Yeah, Elizabeth. So Elizabeth would be out without variance. They're losing Elizabeth.
Yeah, exactly. She's only in it. She needs a she doesn't want the same thing every season. You know, people said the same thing about the whole, you know, the Redemption Island, South Pacific back to back. So I think that we saw variants firsthand there.
She needs variants.
So maybe a few seasons. But the thing about Survivor is such high variance and how things go every time. That makes it more interesting. So we're talking about things about idols nullifiers. It adds a lot of variance to the game.
Yeah, nothing funny happens.
That was Alec just realizing I should probably say something. Everyone else is reacting.
Like, I think that the Ponderosa guy might say, like, Alec, can you act like you're a little into the class? Can you act like, try to pay attention? We're trying to make a Ponderosa video here. You can go back to whatever in a couple of minutes.
I wonder also, like, is there a teaching technique for you to, like, if there's a kid who's not really into it, if you acknowledge him a couple times, maybe it'll sort of get his attention? I feel like Christian's doing that with Carl. Like, Carl,
yes.
The idol nullifier Carl, remember
that is exactly what he's doing. He's exactly like catering to Carl.
I love it. This is all just, it's so good. Which, by the way, now after this, who do you think is higher on Jeff's speed dial, Christian or Tyler Perry? Has Christian usurped Tyler Perry as now Jeff's go-to person? Because as Christian said, this lecture is for Jeff as well.
Yeah, I would hope that it's Christian and not Tyler Perry.
I mean, I don't know. I haven't taken any Tyler Perry Survivor science lessons yet.
Yeah. Do you think that Tyler Perry comes to Jeff Probst's house with this whiteboard and says, all right, Jeff, here's a neat little problem, okay? You have these bathing suits. They get dirty. What if we put some variance into the equation, Jeff?
Or the opposite, since they can't change clothes. I feel like, well, Christian's teaching Survivor science, Tyler Perry's teaching Survivor creationism. Mm-hmm. Like, very basic, like, does not involve any sort of elements of the game, actual game whatsoever. It's sort of like just from his own beliefs.
Now, the bathing suits, they're good for the contestants, but it's not good for the people at home, maybe.
Now, if you had an idol, and look, if we had the same idol season after season, it would get boring, right? Elizabeth, or Jeff's wife, wouldn't you? You'd probably jump off after a couple seasons, right? I just imagine Tyler Perry's like taking them all hostage in the living room at this point. So if we introduce this god idol, provides a bit more variance, then you can really turn the game into another gear.
Or how about you introduce a pants nullifier? And then lots of variants.
This is how Tyler Perry lost his tenure at Survivor U.
He got expelled from the... They took him off.
He went into Principal Bailey's office, and he said, look, Perry, you're coming up the works with your cockamamie ideas. And so he says, I'm going to go off and found my own college.
Okay. All right. You, Mike Bloom, you mentioned Mike White. Let me bring in a question. This is from one of our listeners, Tara Renee. Tara says, in his exit press, Christian said he had a strong relationship with Mike, stating that they'd meet in the middle of the night to discuss life and strategy. Is Mike White's game much stronger than we realized, or is he a goat no matter what he does? So you mentioned Mike White, the game that he's playing. I thought this was his best week. He got a fishy. He won immunity. Is Mike a potential winner this season?
I am going to say right now, and this is excluding any sort of edit evidence that might be contrary to the fact, right now, from a pure gameplay perspective, in my opinion, this is Mike White's game to lose.
Whoa, that is a hot take.
Well, because I'm thinking that, you know, this episode, to your point, it's the most active he's probably been all game. Mike has been playing, I think, admittedly, a pretty passive game. I think, what was that secret scene he talked about a couple weeks ago? Like, low-key, purposely under the radar, just to sort of get in everybody's good graces. But he has, you know, essentially been putting money in this social cachet piggy bank that this week he finally broke open to get done what he wanted. At least what the editor told us was nobody wanted to surprisingly target Christian. Christian almost got away with it this week because of all the Davey versus Nick mishigash, but Mike was able to surprisingly corral all the votes together because he is so well connected. And I'll admit, I wasn't necessarily seeing it either until this week, and also his secret scenes where the benefit of, you know, getting close to the end with these secret scenes are that we're finally starting to get people talking about their strategy for the end. And Mike brought up the point that, again, if we're talking about story versus resume, yes, he does have this chip on his shoulder in the form of his wealth status outside of the game, but he is a storyteller. That's what he does.
But what is his story, though?
His story is that, you know, he is someone who was able to go in there, and he knew, he actually says this in one of his secret scenes, the key to a good survivor game is to have each person feel like you're being real with them. And he has made, in my opinion, the most realistic connections with each and every person out there. He could say, I'm a super fan who came in here and wanted to play this game for fun. And so I made connections with all the people out there. And there was a point where I realized that I could actually turn this around and win it. And so I was able to utilize these relationships to get what I wanted done. I got Christian out when nobody else wanted to. I slew the biggest Goliath of the Davids. You even saw that, like, when Christian was voted out, Mike has his head in his hands as if to say almost like, oh my God, this finally happened. After 2 weeks of getting this guy out, it finally worked. And, you know, it was all my thing. And it's an added benefit that Christian acknowledged immediately that it was him. You know, since the vote was 3-2-2, it could fall on somebody else's shoulders. But the fact that Christian acknowledged it was Mike and didn't have negative feelings attached is fantastic. And Mike says something else in his secret scenes where he says, the thing that I'm good at is spinning. I'm going to do the best job at the end, not only spinning my game, but dismantling everyone else's. That's another thing as well, is that depending on who he sits next to, Mike can, you know, not only talk up his own game to his benefit, but he could also, since he's sort of been, quote unquote, Goliath strong for a good portion of time, he could also talk down the people around him in order to pump himself up. He has that narrative ability that you and Sophie talked about is sort of essential in Survivor nowadays.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. I would very much be eager to see what he would say at that final three and how he would be received, because, you know, we're sort of, you know, guessing how people would react. It doesn't seem like that the players have talked about that in terms of anything outside of the game, any reasons that would prevent them from voting for Mike. I want to play one of the other secret scenes for you. This is Allison this week, and Allison has a secret scene called Most Attractive People. And I said, boy, this is really shady, Allison, that you should not be doing a secret scene talking about who's attractive and who's not. That is highly inappropriate, but of course I wanted to check it out. And so but no, Allison is talking about who she thinks is going to be good in front of the jury, and I thought this was interesting to hear. Now obviously is missing an outside perspective of what people think of Allison, but I thought this was a good thing to listen to in terms of how Allison sees the other people in terms of whether they're good or bad to take to the end with them.
The end with are Mike. At this point in time, I think the most attractive people to go to the end with are Mike, although he's played a good game. Angelina, because she's been a goat since about the merge episode. She's done well for herself since.
I like that she talks about the episode while she's out there.
Yeah, I think she's like put her producer hat on a bit and is talking about like, how would this be a good episode?
Yeah, so that episode, yeah, that was a bad episode for her.
But I still see a goat. Angelina is so transparent. I mean, she goes on these platitudes of how what she's done has been so great. Okay, you sat out an immunity challenge to get the tribe rice. Any other person could have done that. I don't think she believed she was going to win that challenge. I don't really believe so. I mean, it's just behavior like that. She also has pissed off a lot of people, even though she's working with Nick and Davey at this point. Eye rolls, eye rolls, eye rolls are all they truly give her. And I actually think Kara is a pretty attractive person to go to, both literally attractive, but like, I would feel really good sitting next to Kara at the end. I don't think at this point in time she's played an impressive game. Certainly not been a flashy game. She is well-liked. That is the one thing, is that most people on the jury like Kara. And so that's the scary aspect, that if people are bitter, Kara walks away with $1 million.
Mike, I think that's the biggest wild card going into this week.
The Kara thing?
The Kara thing. Yeah, I really do, because I was taking a look at the jury, and I feel like that there are a lot of positive feelings for Kara potentially with the makeup of this jury. Just in terms of like just for the sake of this exercise, like Nick and Davey, I don't think they're going to get there. I think that I went into this with Steven the other night, but, and maybe you feel differently, but I think the odds are stacked against them. And then also in one of Mike's secret scenes, he's also talking about how he's thinking about making the fire. And I don't think he wants any part of those guys in terms of that being, I would think, the two most likely fire starters on the board.
Yes, both, you know, incendiary personalities and literal fire starters. And that's another interesting thing as well. Mike sort of talked about how one of the small benefits of the fire making challenge is that it brings back this final two concept of, okay, one person is allowed to, you know, pick one person to take the end. And that's sort of where Mike and potentially Kara's games come in handy. If they have good relationships with basically everyone who's left, there's a good chance that they could be the one picked. And then if you can't make fire, it amounts to diddly squat because you're going to get picked to come along anyway. Now, to the point that you made before, historically speaking, that hasn't spoken well to jury performance. But if you look to get to the final three, getting picked to get there instead of, you know, being forced to make fire, which is one of the skills near the bottom of your list, is definitely preferential.
Right, but we've only seen it happen twice, so it's a small sample size. But so here's the exercise I want to do, okay? So let's say it's a big twist this season. There's a final four, okay? It's a final four this season.
Don't put that out in the universe.
Just for the sake of this exercise, because then we have to get into all the different things, okay? But let's just say it's a final four now and a nine-person jury, just to sort of get a sense of what we're looking at. Elizabeth, of that final four, who's Elizabeth going to vote for?
Her fellow horse lover, Kara.
Yeah. There's only one person that she even has a relationship with.
Angelina did tell her.
She hates Angelina. I don't think she cares for Angelina. Okay. Then after that is John. I think that his vote is truly up in the air. I think we have no idea of that four who he'd be most likely to vote for.
Yeah, considering that we said, I mean, he might vote
for
Angelina. In the
all-Goliath final four.
I think he might be a vote for Angelina, considering that, like, as some players have said in exit press, he was closely connected with her strategically and nothing else. And he seemed to still have some appreciation for her in his exit press as well. So I could see him being sort of like the Devin Pinto vote for Ryan in a similar way.
Now we have Dan next. I think he's another toss up. I think we don't know what Dan is going to do.
Yeah, because, you know, Dan had the impression that Kara did not necessarily flip on him, but flip on the Goliaths. How is he going to feel about that? Whereas Mike did say Goliath strong, which is sort of like tattooed on Dan's chest at this point from the number of times he said it. So I feel like he's between those two.
Okay. You have Carl.
Carl seemed to get along well with, I don't know, Carl seemed to get along well with all four of them. Since his storyline was so David-centric, it's tough to sort of suss out who he liked the most out of those four.
I feel like that Carl is either Angelina or Kara.
Okay. I guess, I mean, if he's going with, since everyone's picking stuff from the Vuku days, maybe Carl decided to go with Kara because of that?
Yeah, that's what I would think. Gabby, I feel like, is probably Allison. And then if not Allison, I think that maybe Kara is second choice.
Yeah, I think Allison would definitely be, considering that, you know, technically, you know, they still voted together. Basically, when Gabby wanted the plan to come through, Allison didn't really betray her in many ways, left a good lasting impression. I think that that's a locked vote for her.
Christian, I would think, based on, you know, he's talking up Mike, that he might be in the Mike camp.
Yeah, I'd say that's a big vote in Mike's corner. He seems to be, I think, the most admirable of Mike right now on the jury.
What's that word?
Babitable. That's what I would sound like on day seven if I was on Survivor and attempted to say that. But I think that, yeah, I think that if we're looking for, you know, the biggest Mike spokesperson, and also because of the position that he is on the jury, I think that he would be locked in for Mike.
Okay. Now, Davey, now again, this is hypothetically, we were putting Davey and Nick on the jury here. They're obviously still in the game. But Davey, who did he pick to go on that reward with them of this four? I think he likes Kara the best.
Right, but does that translate to a jury vote? Davey seems to be like someone who's all about, hey, it's all in good fun, we're just playing the game. Do you think he would value someone who made more active moves or someone who he likes more?
Well, who is he going to, you think he's going to be for, I mean, he seems to have no relationship with Mike.
Yeah, I mean, they definitely seem like they're like the friends of friends. They're sort of like the, I don't know, like the George and Elaine of like, we can't hang, we don't hang out without, you know, Nick and Angelina there.
They're like Charlotte and Miranda. It's like they're not hanging out. Is Nick Wilson Carrie?
And which one's Miranda?
I don't know. That's for another podcast. But I feel like that he loves Kara. He talked about that. So I feel like that he could be, I guess you could squint and say, okay, maybe he could go for Mike. And I think that Nick would go for Mike, except if, how is Nick going out of the game? Because it seems like that Nick had a lot of faith in Mike and the rock star. Is it possible that to get Nick out, then Mike could lose a jury vote here?
I mean, we're interpolating a lot of fan fiction at this point. Maybe it was just like it was going to be a bygone conclusion. So Mike said, you know what, I had to vote you out because you're the biggest threat left. But I do think that also Nick is someone who has a pretty cool head for stuff game wise. And probably even going out, you know, super late, like Final Five, Final Four, would not have that much emotional influence in terms of the way he was casting votes. But to your point, running this simulation, it does seem like it would be in this weird Final Four situation. It would be close between, it'd be a toss up basically between Mike and Kara, with Allison and Angelina picking up stray votes along the way.
Mm-hmm. And obviously one of them's not going to be there. It will be a final three. And then that'll probably tip the scales. But I think so. A lot is going to come down to, you know, what would the remaining Davids in Nick and Davey, how are they going to go out of the game? Who are they upset with? Who are they giving credit to? And then I think the Brochachos in the mayor of Slamtown and Dan, what are they going to do? And it is Dan, the Goliath in Bloom. Is he going to be punitive towards Kara?
It's a good question. Like, or will he go?
And we've got Alec also, who would be a very, I think that a vote for Kara, potentially Allison. They did do, a lot of people want to know that they gave a Shaka back and forth.
Oh my God. I'm pretty sure Alec doesn't have 3 fingers on his hand at this point. I'm pretty sure it's only a thumb and a pinky, considering how many times he throws up that Shaka Bro sign.
Yeah. So I think this is a favorable jury towards Kara.
The question is, do they realize that too? You know, we're
do
getting
the players realize it, or does the jury realize it?
Do the players realize it? Could we get to a point? There are only 2 more votes before the fire making, but they could also say, like, oh, yeah. I mean, Allison vocalized the fact that at least one person's onto the aware that Kara's well liked, and Allison's even aligned with Kara. And plus, if we're still going along with, you know, we'll see if this quartet ends up, of the barbecue people end up coming back together tenuously. Allison and Kara are on the outs. You know, I feel like Kara is in a very good position if she makes it to the end, but it may be surprisingly a bit tougher to get there. I know you say that, like, okay, Nick and Dave, you're obviously in the most danger, but I feel like, you know, you have Allison and Kara there, maybe second most in terms of people that others are eyeing as, oh, they can't be sitting at the end either with me.
All right, Mike, let me play you this question. This is from Tori from BC, has a question about this fire making challenge.
Hey, Rob and Mike, it's Tori from Victoria, BC, Canada. Longtime listener, first-time caller. Throughout this entire season, I've been a Nick Wilson truther, but there's been 2 signs in the last 2 episodes I can't ignore. Allison making a super fast fire last episode, and Allison and Alec exchanging shakas at Tribal. Could we see an Allison win next week?
Okay. A lot of people focused on, Allison made fire like that. Could you see potentially Allison? How is she going out? If hypothetically, is she getting to the 4? Is she getting picked off before the 4? And then we're seeing either Davey or Nick fail in a Final Four challenge of making the fire. What how do you see this is going to work?
I love that everyone keeps pointing back to like this 5-second fire scene. It literally is like the smoking gun in terms of, ooh, this is what Allison might do, just because I think we're sort of grasping for editorial footage that might, you know, foreshadow this. I would say Allison brings up a point here where, like, once you've sort of been marked with the scarlet letter of being a threat, you're not going to get rid of that. And so I do wonder, now that Christian's gone, if we're talking about getting rid of Meat Shields, yes, we still do have the appeal of Davey and Nick, who have promptly thrust themselves into the spotlights by their own petards. But Allison is still one who has come up in what, each of the past like three tribal councils. I feel like there has to be a point where, as she vocalized before, she has a story. And if people recognize the fact that she has a story, they're going to be able to get rid of her. I feel like that, again, what makes Mike's case so interesting is that people sort of disregard him because they say, like, okay, he doesn't really have a story because he's rich and he was just here to have a good time. Whereas Allison has been fighting this quote unquote underdog way for the past week or so. Those are actionable items she can come into for the final tribal council. I wouldn't want to give her the opportunity to do that, even if it meant maybe keeping another dangerous person in the game in lieu of that.
Yeah. Mike, do you have a final three that you're predicting?
I'm going to say, I feel like Mike and Angelina are going to be there. I'm just trying to figure out who that third is going to be, because I see your point, the 35% bet that Steven made about Davey and Nick not being able to get in there. But I feel like the end game is such a flurry that I can't not imagine one person sneaking their way in there in the end. And it might not be a winner. I mean, no, they might not necessarily win there, but I can at least predict 67% of who I think at the final three will be.
You don't think if either Davey or Nick gets to the end, they win?
I mean, it really depends on who they're sitting next to and how the other people sort of talk about it. I think that on paper, yes, but with this new final tribal format where it becomes much more of a big conversation and maybe one of them gets caught in a lie and sort of, you know, gets their game completely falling apart, I think that they are the favorites going in, but you never know, especially as of late, what a final tribal council can provide. And especially what happens over the course of the next few days. Let's remember last season, I think Dominic stood a much better chance of winning at the final seven than at the final six, where it seems like his behavior with voting out Sebastian and what he did, trying to give the fake idol to Donathan, like that just plummeted his chances. And that's the reason why the last five jurors all voted for Wendell. So there is still a little bit of game left to be played over the course of the next 2 hours.
And I touched on this with Steven. I think that really intriguing could be somehow if Davey and Nick could rally, knock out Allison, Angelina, and Mike. And somehow if it's Davey, Nick, Kara final three, could the Goliaths on the jury give it to Kara?
Yeah, that's true, because there would be more Goliaths than David's on the jury, right? So that would be crazy that the person who would be considered the David amongst the Goliath who was the David in the final situation ended up getting crowned the prize. I guess the prediction sort of holds. It's just the names were reversed a bit.
Right. Live look in on Jeff Probst's head.
Same thing as he goes through Tyler Perry's big presentations every quarter or so that he does at his house.
Yeah. Here's a neat problem. Two Goliath-y Davids and one David-y Goliath in the end. Who wins?
Yeah, this is a very like chocolate and peanut butter situation. Like everything is sort of intermingled at this point. These names
are
purely...
Is that a regular peanut butter cup or the tree?
Well, listen, I think this one has more peanut butter, so I guess it's the tree. And that's science. That's the science of peanut butter, apparently. I think that, you talked about this, how essentially we've sort of ended up with the most quote unquote David of the Goliaths. And I think that just sort of comes from the fact that the biggest Goliath-y people on the Goliath tribe had targets on their heads from the beginning, whether it was intentionally or through their own actions or unintentionally. And so it ended up sort of being this effect where everything, much like a bell curve, sort of pushed towards the middle. And we ended up sort of in the configuration where we are now, where we have people like Kara and Mike and Allison, and maybe Angelina is a little more outspoken, and that pushes her a bit more towards the Goliath end of the spectrum in terms of the actual Goliath tribe. But it's still, I think compared to some of the other more headstrong members of the tribe, it makes sense that these would be the remnants.
Okay. All right, Mike, let's go back to talking about the theme of the season a little bit. And let me play a question from one of our longtime listeners. Here's Ken.
Hey, Rob and Mike. I think they did a good job of setting the story against the concept of David versus Goliath. But it does look like the Davids are headed for a fall, which isn't how you'd expect such a story to end. Could we say that this story is more like a different mythological story, Icarus, where Icarus flew too close to the sun and melted his wings and crashed? And I think that that's more of the tale that Davids are being, that we're being told about the Davids right now. So what do you guys think? Thanks.
Yeah, was David versus Goliath not the right story that we're telling here, Mike?
Well, first, spoiler alert for Icarus. Just want to put that out there posthumously.
Did the Davids fly too close to the sun?
Well, there wasn't a lot of sun out there. Maybe they flew too close to the rain clouds and got electrocuted. That might be more appropriate for David versus Goliath. I did tweet this out that it does feel like the Davids in these last few episodes threw out their own rakes on the ground and promptly stepped on them Sideshow Bob style to whack themselves in the face. I would say this is not mythological by any means, but I would say maybe this season's more like the Bad News Bears, where it's a ragtag bunch that comes together. They're able to like work their way through a good amount of these teams, but then they lose in the end. So I don't know if that's exactly akin to a Greek myth, but it is a piece of pop culture that might be more comparable. I don't know if it compares to Big at all, Rob, so I don't know if you want to chime in about this. No,
I don't think it's really anything like Big, because that would be like if they were Davids and they wish they were Goliaths, and then realize that being a Goliath is not all it's cracked up to be when they go on the reward and play the giant piano with their feet or anything then, like that, to eat caviar.
And then they come like back that. And they're all wearing big jackets and Angelina's jealous.
Yeah. And then there's the whole scene where then the grown-up is dating the older woman, and then they have a picture that gets taken of them at the carnival, and it's a caption, it's a whole thing.
Is Jeff Probst Zoltar from this regard? Like, you are now a Goliath.
Maybe it is not Icarus. Maybe Davy tells us exactly what this story is here when he's talking about the situation on the reward challenge.
This reward is like Goodfellas. If you're going to take him out, you're going to treat him really well and then slit their throats in the end.
Is this more like the story of Goodfellas, where the Davids are like Robert De Niro and Joe Pesci and Ray Liotta, and they come up, and then ultimately they have a comeuppance?
Ever since I could remember, I always wanted to be a David. I mean, yeah, it could very well be. That was really interesting. Like, I don't know, it's very comparable to like fattening up a pig before you slaughter it, basically, is like what Davy was trying to do. He has this very odd logic of like, you know what they say, keep your frenemies close and your
By choosing Kara and by choosing Nick, this is the exact epitome of keep my frenemies close, Nick, and my friends closer.
Yeah, the epitome. That is the epitome of keeping your frenemies close and your friends closer.
Oh, so is that why Pascal was so close with Sean? Was he his frenemy? Yeah, that's I don't know, Dave, that's a bit of a misnomer there, Davey.
Okay, who is the Joe Pesci character in the David versus Goliath Goodfellas?
I would say, as of this episode, it's tough because you would imagine someone who has a bit of a short temper. And I would say maybe Nick last episode, but this episode, considering this is apparently the only time she's been pissed off the entire game, I have to say it's Angelina.
Okay. All right. Well, that's a good segue for some Angelina talk. And
yes.
Let me play a voicemail from one of our listeners, Hanan.
Hi, Rob. Hi, Mike. People are really enjoying the season, myself included, but they've also been hating on Angelina for some reason. I'm a big, big Angelina fan, and I wanted to know if you think the season would still be regarded as Cagayan of the 30s if she wins. Thanks for taking my call. Bye.
Mike, could this season still be regarded as Cagayan of the 30s if Angelina wins?
I mean, I would put it past Cagayan, yeah, even if Angelina wins.
It would be better.
It would be brilliant. It's not going to happen. You know what? Actually, let's manifest something. Let's put this out into the universe, and I hope this happens. I will make a promise on air right now, a verbal contract. If Angelina Keely somehow wins Survivor David versus Goliath, I, Mike Bloom, at some point in the year 2019, will get a Survivor-themed tattoo in honor of Angelina's win.
Can it be the tattoo that Casey from Big Brother got?
Let's go.
Yeah, it'll be an N64 controller with Brochacho written on one button, eggs and jackets on the control stick. Because, I mean, it would be incredible. And look, I know she's an absolutely polarizing figure. I know things like the rice negotiation and her constantly bringing it up despite insisting that she's not bringing it up can annoy some people. But my God, she's such a fun character. I would even say that I have had like an idea mulling over in my head of who's the Mount Rushmore of post heroes versus villains female characters. Who are like the best female characters we've had in what I would consider modern day Survivor 20s
okay.
onwards.
We're talking about characters. Welcome USA style.
Exactly. And I'm putting players aside. Okay. I think players, you could put like Kim up there. You can put okay. Sarah Lucina. But in terms of characters, let me propose this Mount Rushmore and you as the president.
Oh,
of
okay.
RHAP,
I thought you wanted my list. Okay. So Mount Rushmore.
Oh, you know,
okay.
Do you want, we can compare lists if you want to.
No, I don't have a list prepared. So let me hear your list.
So my list right now, my top three for the longest time were Abby Maria, Cass, and Debbie Wanner. And I think I'm going to have to add Angelina there in the Teddy Roosevelt spot as a latecomer in the fourth one.
Wow. Okay. This is a very specific list. Okay. Here's a neat problem. Who are the Mount Rushmore women of Survivor post heroes versus villains?
This is a Reddit thread waiting to happen, by the way.
Yeah. Okay. So let me just think. Nayanka does not qualify.
No, she quit. She was gonna get up there, but she quit before the sculpting started.
Okay. She quit. I'm just trying to cycle through as quickly as possible other characters. I mean, it sounds, it's looking good for me. I don't have anybody that's jumping out, so I'll sign off.
All right, we got your signature on this, and we'll see if it goes through the Congress and Senate that is the social media, as to see whether they veto it. But as for right now, the erection of sorry, Dr. Mike just got triggered listening to that. Assuming he listens, but the Oh, no, get out. Tyler Perry is giving a presentation, Dr. Mike. You can't come through the window. But the building of this very eclectic Mount Rushmore, we'll start setting it off as soon as 2019, in line with me getting my Angelina-based tattoo.
Okay. All right. Mike, it was such a great moment in terms of when Angelina wanted to go on the reward with Davey. And so much credit has been given to the Survivor editors this season. And I thought they really knocked it out of the park again this week with this scene, Angela wanting to go on the reward with Davey.
Now, before Davey makes his final choice of who's going to join him, does anybody here want to plead their case? Davey, the hard
Davey,
part...
I'll say something, Davey. I hate to pull this card, but when I got the rice for the tribe, you won immunity. I was so proud of you. And we've been able to eat because of that. I really didn't want to pull that out, but if that means anything, this would mean everything to me today.
I really think I've got to look out for the person that's been looking out for me ever since we were back on the Vuku tribe.
Kara.
I've got to go with her.
Kara, come on over. Sorry, guys.
Oh, man.
blurred your enthusiasm. Not to spoil our TV character, Bright Steel, too much, but I think Angelina would be up there with the winner of that in terms of how excited I would be if she won the game.
No, she really would be. And I think that she would be, I think, such an exclamation point on this season in terms of if she could somehow win. But is this at all a possibility?
So the weird thing about Angelina is that from a social perspective, not there whatsoever. But if you look at her moves in a vacuum, she has a couple things that she could, you know, nail to the wall there, metaphorically speaking.
No, I think she really could. I feel like that if she got up there and was able to sort of articulate about how, you know, she was a key player with the Goliaths, and then when the Goliaths got together at the merge, everybody was looking at her. She was like, you know, a key decision maker in terms of what was going on, and then the Goliaths collapsed. But she was able to somehow survive the car wreck, and then able to make relationships with the other side. She zigged when she should have zigged. She did get that. I don't know if you heard, Mike. She did sacrifice to get rice for the tribe.
And first I've heard
that,
of it.
You know, that people talked about her that, you know, she was going to be a target. She may, if she gets to the end, like I do think she does have a story to tell, but can she tell that story in a way that doesn't make people annoyed with her?
Absolutely not. So maybe if she, I don't know, has an envoy, sends a messenger to speak in her place, you know, like when Pascal collapsed in Survivor Marquesas and John Carroll like had to basically be the mouthpiece and say this is what happened, like maybe Angelina can fake an injury and be like, "A Christian, you talk instead of me. I'll feed you the note cards and you read them out."
Yeah. But it would be great. That there are other outcomes that are not as fun, but that would be a great ending to the season. I would love that. If we look back and said, "Oh my, can you believe it? Angelina, the winner of Survivor 37. This is amazing."
I will not spoil any international Survivor seasons.
I know what you're saying. I hear you.
Yeah, we have been greatly spoiled with one particular winner this year, so it would just be the icing on top of this cake. And if she won, I hope everyone throws rice like a big wedding as she walks down the aisle at the studio to congratulate, you know, her on her win.
Yeah. Okay, Mike, speaking of rice, I want to talk to you about, so after Davey did not take Angelina on the reward, and Angelina was going to have something else in mind for when she got back.
I'm just fuming. So I spring into action to make the biggest pot of rice that we can manage. I guess it was revenge rice.
Okay, Mike, you host or co-host the Top Chef wrap up show. Can you give us the recipe for revenge rice?
I'm pretty sure Brandon Hans patented it during Survivor Karamoan. This is such a stupid idea. This is cutting off your nose to spite your face.
Yeah.
Like 2 days, 2 days later, she's gonna be like, "Oh man, oh I'm so starving. I shouldn't have made all that revenge rice."
Yeah, and they made that deal, I believe Jeff Probst said specifically, "All right, I'm going to give you enough rice to get you through 10 days. It's not going to be, we're not going to get crazy. It's going to be just enough."
Don't pussyfoot around with it. Yeah. Poor,
and they got back, like, Carl's like, "Let's make the biggest pot of rice." And they're like, "Yeah, now we're making revenge rice."
Yeah, I don't know. Like, I feel like they're going to find, like, any excuse to make rice. It's going to be like, "Ooh, you know what? Lincoln's birthday. Time to make some rice."
Lincoln's birthday.
Yeah, I don't know. They were out there in the spring. Like, I feel like, you know, it's like International Something Day. Oh, can we take the day off? You know, it's International Donuts Day. Let's go get some donuts. Like, Angelina could haggle her way to be like, "Oh, guys, you know, day 37 is a milestone day. It's a prime number. Let's make some rice on it on that occasion."
Yeah. Jeff's going to be getting down to it. All right. Final five. Here we go. Ready for a meal. Jeff. So we're out of rice again. but I have a proposal.
Sorry, Jeff, we were very spiteful towards some choices that were made.
If I'm not going to name names, but if Davey had made some better decisions around here, then we wouldn't be in this predicament right now. I had told him that he was supposed to take me on the reward. He didn't listen. And now, because of Davey's poor decision making, we are once again out of rice. Sorry, Davey.
So here's what we
will do. I didn't want to mention this, but it's true.
We will offer up Davey. Davey will quit the game if you give us rice for the next 2 days. We've all discussed this. I came up with a way, maybe a sort of cocky maybe way, that Davey might have been able to bypass the situation without pissing off Angelina.
Mm-hmm.
So, I mean, you recall when Jeff was lasciviously talking about the Mala Mala Beach Club, he mentioned what, like, sliders, lobster, surf and turf, fried chicken, all meat dishes.
Oh.
Could Davey have theoretically said, Angelina, look, I wanted to take you, but listening to all the things that Jeff listed out, that menu did not have a vegetarian option. You would not have enjoyed yourself.
No, they don't care, because somebody else in one of the secret scenes last week was like complaining that that Mike got picked and Angelina were going on the reward, or that they picked Mike and he's a vegetarian. Why did he have to go to the reward that they were going to, the barbecue on the barge? Why did they? So, you know, that people, they don't care about that stuff. People just want to go on rewards.
That's true. I guess you're so like, people are so aching for stimuli. They could go to like a parliamentary session and they would be like jumping for joy and like crying at the prospect of it. Could you imagine Jeff being like, you'll be going to City Hall to witness a bill debate?
Is this Fiji politics? Is this, well, are you going back to the United States?
Well, they did have a coup several years back, so it could be a bit more exciting, but like, they'll have everything there. Suits. Pens. Legislation.
I would imagine there's some sort of legislative body going on in Fiji. So you're going to go watch some sort of a Fijian law passed?
Yeah, you basically go attend like a live taping of Fijian C-SPAN, of F-SPAN.
You're going to be cutting the ribbon at a new city hall that's being built in Fiji.
There you'll meet the Parks Department, the Sanitation Department. You'll undergo a debate as to whether a tree should be planted on Main Street that slightly blocks the stop sign. Worth playing for?
No.
No, can we all sit out and exchange for rice so we
don't
have to go to
that?
We'd
like to all sit out of this one in order to play to get some rice. Okay, Mike. So many other things to get to. Let me ask you this question from Ariel, and I should have played this when we were having our Mike discussion. But she has a question for you about Mr. Mike White.
Hi, Robin. Mike, this is Ariel. How would you guys compare Mike White's time on Survivor with his appearances on The Amazing Race? I know they are very different games, but I'm wondering if you have picked up on any similarities between both shows, either with his behaviors, social style, or possibly strategy, even though I use that term very loosely because any strategy in TAR is much different than Survivor strategy. My memory of Mike was that he was very excited to run the race with his dad, Mel, and was a supportive and caring race partner, but it was really Mel who brought the funny entertainment to the show between the two of them. What are your memories? And based on his TAR runs, are you surprised at all that he made it to the finale? Thanks for another great season of podcasting and happy holidays.
Okay. Mike, I have not seen Mike White's runs on The Amazing Race. Is there any similarity between Mike White, the racer, and Mike White, the Survivor player?
So it's so interesting in that I went into this, I actually think when we talked about this during the preseason, I thought Mike was going to be sort of like our go-to one-liner guy. He's a writer, and him and his dad sort of filled that position. You even got sort of a taste in it in his dad's very like acerbic, self-deprecating letter to him a few episodes ago. But I do feel like we've had a couple of glimpses of Mike here and there. I will say his fashion is probably funnier than anything he said this season, but it sort of has been usurped by all the other calamity going on. So I would say actually Mike is a bit more of a serious reality TV contestant on Survivor than The Amazing Race, Maybe it's because he, I think, likes Survivor a lot more than The Amazing Race. He was a fan of Survivor before The Amazing Race, so maybe he just has more reverence for the game. But I would say he was
on The Amazing Race against his will.
No. I would say that the story of him begging producers to go on to Survivor, I don't know if he was necessarily doing that for The Amazing Race.
Mm.
So I do feel like, I mean, I'm looking at the wiki now. I know he got like an episode title. I mean, he's used to dealing with some stupid stuff as well. I feel like if you can survive trying to transport cheese on a rickety wooden backpack down at the slipperiest hill in the world in the middle of Europe, you can pretty much withstand all of the elements. But maybe the elements are sort of worn down on Mike, where like he's a little more laconic, which is weird because The Amazing Race is so based in killer fatigue. I would say the baseline is still there, but maybe he's able to sort of step out from under his dad's shadow and take the role of the 85-year-old man, as Allison coined him.
Yeah.
Hey, and Mike Wentz will be the oldest Survivor winner, right?
Yeah, she did call him an 85-year-old man in the episode. It was very, very under the radar. Very mean, Dr. Allison.
Yeah, when she has a confessional called Who's Attractive, I think she's building a burn book and we don't even realize it.
Is she the new Corinne?
Ooh, could you imagine Dr. Allison's brutal cast assessment?
I feel like it would be very funny if she had like access to like their medical records of like, all right, here's a new person. This person's name is Frank Simpson. Cholesterol, very high.
I'm going to give a clap for Frank, hint, hint.
What's the hint?
It's a reference to a disease. Dr. Mike might be able to fill you in on that after he gets through Jeff Probst's window. I'm sorry, I soiled your mind now with teaching you what the clap is on the Survivor podcast. I like this. Allison has sort of become a combination of Corinne and Gossip Girl, medically speaking.
She's not afraid of any HIPAA violations either.
No, absolutely not. Listen, other members of this cast are not afraid of their NDAs. I think that's sort of par for the course in terms of standards.
Okay. All right. Maybe she doesn't have access to their medical records, but she just tries to predict what they're going to be.
What they're going to have.
Yeah. She's like, this guy looks like his triglycerides are off the chart.
Absolutely. I'm looking at this guy. I'm thinking heart murmur, and we'll see if that lets their heart take a bit of them too much in the game.
This girl looks like she's got, 30-60 vision at best?
That means she can't see 2 feet ahead of her. Good luck looking for idols, Sally.
Okay.
I like it. People were like painting Allison as like, she's enjoyable. I would say she's the most blasé. We have now created an entire persona for her as mean Dr. Allison.
Based on no medical information.
She's
like House.
She's House. She's Shelter. All right. What have we got here? Looks like too much revenge rice.
All right, Mike, before we go any further, let me stop and take a moment to thank one of our sponsors for this episode of the podcast. Those are our friends over at Blink Home Security. Blink is the ultra affordable 100% wire-free home security camera that runs on 2 AA batteries for up to 2 years. And because Blink cameras don't have any wires, they can be placed virtually anywhere in your home, inside or out. Of course, the number one way to keep your frenemies close and your friends closer, of course, Mike, is a great home security system. Great for keeping an eye on the kids or elderly relatives watching a vacation
like
home.
Like Mike White.
Yeah. Yes, your 85-year-old friends after they come home from the immunity challenge. Keep an eye on them, making sure nobody's serving up revenge rice in your kitchen, monitoring your pets while you're away. All great things that you could do that Nicole and I have our Blink cameras set up. Great for catching our kids touching the Christmas tree when they're not supposed to be, or any sort of thing when you need to step out of the room. It's like having another another set of eyes, hopefully better than Sally's, as she's looking for the hidden immunity idol in the most futile way possible.
Yeah, I mean, hopefully that's better vision than that. And this is also perfect, you know, if Jeff wants to know when Dr. Mike's trying to sneak into his and Tyler Perry's jam sessions, now he'll be able to scout it out and promptly deal with it.
Yeah, with Blink, you make a one-time purchase, have access to a plethora of features, no subscriptions or fees to choose from. Blink cameras start at just $99. You can get on the Blink app on Android, Apple, or an Amazon Fire tablet, which allows you to view your video from anywhere around the world, even from a city council meeting in Fiji. Whether you're traveling out of the country or you want to just check in on your home while you're at work, Blink gives you peace of mind no matter where you are. With motion alerts on your smartphone to capture activity, you'll know exactly what's going on in your home right as it happens. And if you want to make sure your kids make it home safe from school, keep an eye on your pets, Blink does it all. From downloading the app to onboarding the sync module and adding your camera, the entire process should take less than 5 minutes to get yours. Go to blinkforhome.com/robpodcast. That link again, blinkforhome.com/robpodcast. Okay. Mike, let's talk about what was going on in the immunity challenge this week. This is a question we got from Twitter from at not John Fincher. Is it more uncomfortable when your balls separate or when your balls clang together? Let's listen into what Jeff Probst was talking about. And this was a real throwback because Nicole and I used to talk about, you know, the Jeff Probst out of context, inappropriate quote of the week. And it really seemed like that Jeff was, you know, okay, he was doing it on purpose for a while. And then for a long time, like, we, you know, I play all these clips. He wasn't doing any of this. And then all of a sudden, we were all in on the inappropriate clips this week.
Yeah, I mean, we jazzed off this little chestnut. And I wonder if it goes back to what we were talking about at the beginning of the podcast. Jeff is now making the show for the players instead of the audience. Is he thinking like, well, I'll have a little fun out there. I'll throw some little dirty witticisms out there. Sorry, families watching at home, but we're doing it for the contestants.
Well, I wonder, is Jeff saying these things in this challenge in particular, where if he can get somebody to giggle and then that throws them off, and like, is Jeff competing against the contestants? Is this like a TKO type challenge?
Yeah, well, don't say TKO, considering that some of those, I think that the host of TKO, let's just say he might not have a spot at the Survivor reunion this time. are you implying that Jeff is playing?
Is Kevin Hart still able to host TKO?
Oh,
has he been asked to step aside as host of TKO?
Oh, I don't know. They might have to bring in The Rock to replace him, just because they seem to be all together with their size disparity, or Ice Cube or something. One of his partners. Are you implying that Jeff is essentially trying to play basketball with the Survivor contestants in terms of psyching them out?
You tell me. You tell me. Okay, what is Jeff going for here?
Which is worse, balls separating or balls clanging together? Both give you that uncomfortable feeling in this challenge.
I mean, that was clearly a pregnant pause for effect.
Well,
he stopped in the middle of the sentence, Mike.
Yeah, I feel like in this challenge is the Survivor equivalent of the fortune cookie in bed thing, where you can sort of add in this challenge onto any sort of Jeff Probst inappropriate comment.
I mean, tell me, there is not a Survivor jury in the world that would not rule. Give me the Survivor Supreme Court on the phone. That there is no way that you could sell me that Jeff's like, oh my God, phrasing. Oh, I can't believe I said that. Oh my God, that this is 100% with intent.
Which is worse, balls separating or balls clanging together? Both give you that uncomfortable feeling in this challenge.
Come on.
I mean, the editors might have put the pause in there, but yeah.
I don't know. I have to go back and look. I mean, I don't even know if what he's saying just as a sentence applies. Like,
all right, well, let's just phrase this. Would you rather have your balls separate or clang together, or do you like your relationship to your balls right now?
I think in this challenge you would want them to clang together. I think once they're going separate directions, I think you're kind of screwed. I don't really know how you fix that.
Yeah, in general,
in this challenge,
if you were asked, would you rather have something clang together or separate in terms of body parts? Even I would say clang together, because separate just sounds extremely uncomfortable.
Yeah, like, I mean,
would you rather clang your funny bone or have it separated from your body? Which one would you rather in this challenge?
I mean, I just can't even, get my head around how, in the anatomical sense, they would clang together. I don't know how that's like.
Well, I'm thinking about one of those those balls. Little, like when you put five balls in a row,
yeah,
suspended
sure.
on strings.
Sure, but you're getting some kinetic energy going back and forth, which isn't knocking them. I don't think, like,
is this Christian's second lesson?
Here's a neat problem. You have
two balls
clanging together.
Clanging together creates kinetic energy. It's a potential, like going up a roller coaster, much like the game of Survivor. And then when you go down, so does your mood, obviously.
But they're all different, so there's variance.
There's variance. Some can survive the clang. Some shatter like Fabergé eggs. It all depends. You know, when you're going to have your balls cleaned together maybe a few times, and the same thing happens before you give up on them. You got to have some variance there.
Now, where are you? Are you in the tropics or are you in Antarctica? Because that's also going to create variance.
How old are you? Have they dropped yet? Is another thing. Because at what distance are we talking?
Speaking of how they dropped yet.
Both of Davey's balls drop at the same time.
I mean, that's the theme of this episode, considering the move that he made on Nick, right?
Okay. Jeff is not done. He's got more. Let's bring Christian into this.
Christian, right on the edge. Christian, ball dangling on the edge of his disc. Christian could sense it was over before it happened.
Emily!
Oh, boy.
Christian, right on the edge. Christian, ball dangling on the edge of his disc. Christian could sense it was over before it happened.
Oh, man.
that is kinetic energy.
Not a neat problem.
No. Nuts, emphasis on not on neat.
Not a neat problem.
Very untidy.
Yeah.
Grab your balls.
Knock, knock.
No, get away. I can imagine, like, Dr. Mike rises out of the sand like some sort of wraith to collect the balls at the end of this. Gollum-like.
Knock, knock.
Be light to the balls. And that, like, horrendously yellow shirt is now, like, tattered rags.
Zombie Dr. Mike shows up.
And then he takes the Statue of Liberty pose, holding all the balls in hand.
Yeah. I did text Dr. Mike, and I asked him about
why
all
didn't
this.
You open that box?
Did ask Dr. Mike. I said, by the way, which is worse for people, balls clanging together or separating?
He what was said, the response?
He said, I think clanging is worse.
Really?
No way.
No, Dr. Mike. I don't know. This informs me more about maybe your own proclivities than I'd like to know.
Grab your balls.
Oh, goodness. Listen, I know there's been complaints about too many stand in one place immunity challenges, but considering the amount of double entendres that came out of this, I think it's wholly worth it.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. So no complaints here. No complaints here. Well done all around. And another point in the favor of best season ever. Don't at us.
I also like Nick's ball is taking a little journey.
I'm not sure necessarily how that's a double entendre, but... You know,
well, maybe if we're talking about if it's not based on David versus Goliath, maybe it should be based on the Greek myth of the Odyssey and Nick's ball.
Oh, my God. All right. Well, congratulations to Mike White for his hard fought victory in this immunity challenge.
Well, when you get to be 85 years old, you have pretty control of your balls at this point, or at least where they are.
All right, Mike, we have this Wednesday night. It is going to be the highly anticipated Survivor finale. Usually I have a voicemail from the Woj to set this up, but it's still, no matter what, time to get into our favorite pre-finale game of Who Will Speak at the Finale?
/ the only pre-finale game.
Okay, now Mike... Unfortunately, the game of Who Will Speak at the Finale has really been thrown off over these last couple seasons, since you could count on one hand the number of survivors that get to speak at the finale. Last season, we attempted to pick who would speak at the finale. It used to be we used to pick who won't speak. Then we were picking who would speak. But I have a new wrinkle I want to propose to you.
Oh, boy, this is like real twishy right now. I'm just bringing in all these different twists to throw upon me, but I'm game.
Okay, if you don't like it, we can draft who will get to speak at the finale. Do we know who won in Ghost Island?
I believe I did, because I picked Michael Yerger, who was the clutch person that Jeff went to.
Yeah, I thought it was a tie, and then Laurel had to break the tie between us.
Yeah, but this jury's out on that one, literally.
Okay. All right. So, Mike, we can go back and forth and we can pick people who will get to speak at the finale. Mm-hmm. Or this is a little bit, you know, maybe as shades of the B&B. I have a word draft for you. And we are going to be drafting words that will be said on the finale telecast. I've thought through the rules of this a little bit. We're not going to include proper nouns like people's names. Mm-hmm. And I think that we need to take the obvious survivor words of like vote, jury, game. And I think we should take those off the board. And I think that also like I think it's nouns only.
Okay. I'd be good with that.
Where we want to take like think adjectives like good, happy, you know, things like that.
All right. So, and things like that. And speaking, yeah. And speaking of these use of words. Okay. So yeah. So we are drafting words. So we're sort of rooting for everybody so we're rooting for everyone to speak, but we're rooting for people to say specific words. It's almost like we're creating our own drinking game where every time someone says a word, we get a point.
Specific words we are drafting. Okay, so do you like this idea?
Yeah, I'll give it a thumbs up.
Okay, all right. So we'll do a snake draft. We'll both get to draft 5 words for the Survivor finale. And this is also, I think this is going to be fun to track.
Yeah, I mean, this is going to like, the bean counters behind the scenes of RHAP are going to be like putting in overdrive. At this point, they're going to be making a nice big pot of revenge rice after we've subjected them to this game.
Okay. Do you want the first pick or would you like the second and third pick?
I will take the first pick. Can I say the?
No, you cannot. Don't get like tricky with this. Okay?
I thought I could see a loophole here. Okay. But so we can't say things like vote, idol, jury, etc.
And is the a noun?
I think
you're
going to
get, we got a lot. The grammar police are going to be out in force.
Yeah. Dan leads the grammar police. So yeah,
if Stephen Fishback listened to these podcasts, you'd be in big trouble, mister.
It's a big if. All right. So if I can't do the, I will say, let me say show. Does that count?
Show. Okay. That's interesting. Now, do you get credit for if someone uses it as a verb? Like, I wanted to show everybody I had an idol, so I put a rock down my pants.
I like how we're going like spelling bee sentences now. I think if the word is said...
Well, we're only doing nouns, though.
Okay, so I guess so we can't pick nouns that could also can be used as verbs?
You can, but you will only get credit if the usage is of a noun.
Okay, that's fine. I'm fine, because I feel like there are a lot of super fans. They will reference the show. I feel like that's a solid pick.
Okay, Mike is going with show as the number one pick overall. Okay. I am going to go, I have 2 picks in a row here. I am going to go with two things that are similar in nature. I am going to go with my first pick. I'm going to go with the word. I'm going to say jacket.
See, that's like a very niche word, and it depends on how much time is going to be left in the reunion to bring it up, because there's so much other stuff that happened this season. But I think it's one that we're all rooting for, right? We want to zip up that jacket storyline in one final touch.
Yes. And then I am going to double down, and I'm also going to add the word rice.
Oh,
rice,
okay.
Is the third pick off the board.
An Angelina doubleheader.
Angelina doubleheader, and that might be Angelina multiple times and at multiple occasions.
And I guess by default, since we're not doing points for blurting anymore, I think anytime it's been said. And
wait,
yes,
are you
Angelina,
saying your pick is blurred?
No, it's not blurred. Though I feel like if we have a prediction in terms of what people are wearing, Davey might be the one to like fashion his own hashtag blurred jacket and wear it in the CBS studios.
Or blurred lines. Mike, so yeah, but if the word is said on the telecast, that's the thing. And then the tiebreaker is in the closed caption.
We can't rely on CBS closed captions.
If there are blurred lines in terms of like, wait, did they say show mance or did they say showed ants? Okay. then we'll go to the closed captioning to break the tie.
All right, that works for me. Okay, so you picked jackets and you picked rice.
Jacket singular, yeah. But I still get I get credit for the plural.
Yeah, I think plural. I think we can pluralize. It's fine. It's like Scrabble. We're like, we'll count it all as one. Davey's favorite game. I am going to go with.
Does Davey love Scrabble?
Yeah, he said that the reason why he won that word puzzle is because he loved to play Scrabble all the time.
Wait,
with
I thought
Hazel.
The reason he won that word puzzle was because Angelina sat out.
Well, that's the indirect reasoning. It's sort of like the Rube Goldberg thing. One ball smacked into another, and then it just sort of caused this chain reaction. But no, Davey really loves playing Scrabble with Hazel whenever she could find him.
Yeah.
Where is Davey?
I do want to talk about the decision at some point, because there's a lot of interesting stuff going on in there. But I guess so it's back to me, right, for the word draft?
Wait, what decision?
The idol, I guess not with Hazel, oh, okay. But his big idol decision.
The decision to go look for Davey? Yeah. Okay.
Yes, the decision that Hazel made every beleaguered day to find her son, who probably also had like a big piece of cloth wrapped around his head like he did on the island.
Okay. All right.
Got you, babe.
Okay. All right. Mike, you have the fourth pick overall. In the Survivor finale, and this is only in the this is not the whole finale 3 hours. This is the actual once we're live from CBS Television City that Jeff comes in with the votes. That's what we're talking about.
I'm going. So it's nouns and adjectives, or just nouns?
Nouns. You are not.
Because I have an adjective in mind. I don't know.
What is it? I'll tell you if it's on the
smart.
Smart. I'll allow it. I'll allow it.
Yeah, I'm going to go with smart, because obviously we have the talk of Christian. I feel like there's a couple times where they say Nick is smart, and I feel like that's just a generally good umbrella adjective that could apply to basically any situation. So I'll lock in smart.
We'll let the listeners tell us, if they really want to get like ticky-tack of in terms of what should be allowed and not allowed. But this is the first time we're doing this, so, it's loosey-goosey right now.
Absolutely.
Okay. All right, Mike. You get to go again.
Okay. Let's think here. Something else that might have happened. Can I say advantage, or is that too Survivor intrinsic?
Would we allow idol?
I feel like we wouldn't allow idle, but I feel like advantage is a term that can be applied outside of, and it could be applied to like I had the advantage because I'd won immunity challenges,
If you want it, I'll allow it.
All right, I'll take advantage.
Okay. All right. I'm going to go here. I'm going to go with, I've got two in a row. I'm going to go with robot at number six. And then I will also go with Brochacho.
Oh, that's a good pick. That's a steal right there in the fourth round. I didn't even think of Brochacho.
Okay. All right, Mike, you have your last two picks, 8 and 9.
Oh, boy. Oh, no, I completely forgot about Brochacho being taken. Okay, let's think here. Just sort of thinking out loud about popular words. I mean, I'm assuming David and Goliath are both out the window, right? Are we considering Goliath a proper noun?
Yeah, I think so.
Yeah. And it's part of the theme. Let's see. I will say food.
Okay.
I feel like that's something that it might, you know, if Angelina talks about the aforementioned riots, you can say we had no food. And let's go for just a random word. Just a random word that really doesn't make sense in the game of Survivor, but it could be said. I will go with, let's say, bird.
Bird? What is the context going to be of bird?
Can be like, you know, Kara told the plan to Allison, but Allison, like some sort of bird, flew over to Mike and told the plan to him. I think I might have just made the word equivalent of the Sierra pitch.
Bird. I will be dying if Bird comes up at the Survivor finale.
Well, even if Jeff says, is there some sort of bird in here? Can we get the bird out of the studio, please? It's a live event, so you can't cut it.
Okay. With my final pick here, I am going to go. I'm going to say, how about negotiation?
Okay, that sounds good. That sounds good.
I'm all in on Angelina.
You're bringing Angelina in your view is going to be the star of the 20-minute reunion.
Well, she's a blurter too.
That's true. So she's going to make herself the star of the reunion.
So, all right. So instead of picking people that are going to speak, Mike has gone with these following words to be said. And it's just nothing fancy. 1 point every time the word gets said. Mike is hoping to hear the word show, smart, advantage, food, and bird. maybe somebody, there'll be a reference to T-Bird, and that'll count.
Oh boy, a T-Bird will maybe T-Bird will sub in for Kevin Hart as the host of TKO.
And then I have the words jacket, rice, robot, brochacho, and negotiation.
You went super specific, and I think I went a bit more generic, with the exception of bird. We'll see what strategy ends up working out and who ends up looking like a turkey.
All right, Mike, I know you want to talk about everything that was going on with Davey. Let's get into that a little bit in terms of Davey's big decision. And do you want to talk about your thoughts before I give you some questions about that?
No, throw some questions my way and I'll squeeze them in.
Okay. Let's go ahead and bring in our first question. And here is Millennial Max.
Hey, Rob. This is Millennial Max from Michigan. So I noticed that when Davey got his idol, it was just laying on the table. And the note for said idol was like plastered onto the table, meaning he couldn't take it with him. We've seen that lately, players have started using the instructions as like a certificate of authenticity. They've either used it to prove their idol is real, or other players are requiring that other players show it to them as evidence of a real idol. Do you think this was a conscious effort by production to add a little more uncertainty into the game? I even noticed the idol itself was very basic. It was made from like shells and beads. It kind of looked like a fake idol. What do you think?
Okay. Mike, what do you think about the laminated placemat note for the hidden immunity idol?
Well, considering that like the rules were so complicated, it was like drawing one of those placemat mazes. I think the lamination makes sense. Yes.
We did get a question into us. Were the rules more complicated for Davey's game to earn extra weeks of the idol or for this week in Survivor history?
Well, I don't know. Davey did technically phone a friend in God, so I guess it's comparable. So, I mean, I do sort of like this idea because I think that it is a little, I think the players are starting to break the game by being like, I found an idol. Okay, where's the note? We see when Nick throws out his fake idol, which we'll definitely talk about as well in terms of how effective that was. It had the note wrapped up in it. What if there was some sort of like I don't know, what if the note was like self-destructive or it released like a die pack, like when you rob a bank?
So Davey goes back to the camp covered in blue ink. Like in the movies where the bank robber opens up the thing and it's like an exploding ink pack.
Yeah, and they'll say, like, that octopus, man, like, it really got into me this time.
What'd you catch, an octopus or something?
Yeah, it inked me, and I it slipped loose, but nothing else happened. Nothing else at all.
You know, me being out here, I already feel like I'm a part of an apocalypse, which is my other dream.
Inkpocalypse.
Inkpocalypse.
The thing about Davey's game that was so interesting to me is, like, I like the game, but I did not like it being at Final Seven. I actually think it would be much better if it was pushed back to the Chris Noble part of it, if it was in, like, the Final 13, Final 12, just because I feel like the purpose of putting the game out there is you want them to play it.
Right.
Right? I think that when you put it at such a late stage of the game, when a single vote is so crucial, you are essentially dissuading people from doing so. And that's essentially what happened with Davey here. He's like, my vote's too valuable at the Final Seven. There's a lot of things that could happen if I can't vote, so it's worth it to not take that risk, which unfortunately makes all, like, the art department unfortunately break down because they built all this set and everything. If you want to encourage people to, if you want, I don't know, they might have handcrafted those urns themselves. Who knows?
I guess so.
But I think that if you are trying
might
to encourage,
occupied the survivor kiln for another half an hour.
Well, who's the pottery teacher, the art teacher at Survivor U that teaches pottery?
I don't know.
I forget something. There must be a painter who was on Survivor somewhere. Maybe Coach, because I feel like a lot of weird art teachers have ponytails, so I feel like maybe Coach could fit that bill.
So you feel like that maybe the juice is not worth the squeeze here, where that to give up your vote here at seven is way too valuable, maybe even more value. Your vote is more valuable than immunity here at seven.
Yeah, I think so. I think if you are looking for a place where people can genuinely, you know, gauge, I can give up my vote here, it's when there are those bigger numbers, and it introduces more idols into the game while simultaneously providing those risks. There's a reason why, you know, when Lauren Rimmer had to bank her vote, it was at what, like, Final 10. I think having more, knowing that there are more people around you, and you say, okay, I know I can't vote, but there are five or six other people who will vote with me. I can sort of, you know, not vote this time around. So this is essentially, unfortunately, discouraging people from essentially playing the game.
Well, do you think that maybe the person that this specific thing would have helped the most did not find it, and that being Christian, where had Christian stumbled across this, and, you know, we've seen him be able to divide the island into sectors, and then ultimately, did Nick's gambit ultimately prevent Christian from finding this? Because if Christian ends up immune here at the Final Seven, he plays his idol for himself on this one-time tribal council, and then he makes it to the Final Six.
That's a good point. So I guess, you know,
whether or not he has a vote, I feel like that the idol is more important to him here, even though he did get blindsided and may not have thought that he was going home at that tribal council. It'd be interesting to have seen what he would have done in that spot.
Yeah, and because, I mean, look, if Davey was sitting there for God knows how long, you can only imagine that would be quintupled by Christian going through all the mathematical probabilities as to what he should do. I guess it depends on whether or not he does Christian himself, this, like, Mike Holloway-like figure who would have to win out to make his way to the end.
Yeah.
Because if he does feel that's the case, then yeah, go for broke and absolutely do it. But it seems like, as he talked about in both of our interviews, he felt he actually was in a comfortable enough position that he could survive the vote. So who knows? Maybe even he wouldn't have taken the risk.
So how about this hypothetically, where that the game is at the Final Seven, where, okay, you have the idol, you can extend it to this tribal council or the next tribal council by breaking one of the urns. And then if you get to the final, or like you get through two rounds of it, you have a Tyler Perry idol for the next three rounds where you cannot get voted out if you play through. It's only for three rounds, and you lose your vote if you screw it up. There's only, I guess, somebody did the math on this recently where I think it's better than a 25% chance. But it, like, should we make the prize better if you get through doing it twice?
See, my problem is that I don't know how I feel about introducing that so late in the game. Again, if this was introduced like earlier on in the merge, I think it would be fun because it's sort of like a nice element to play with. But if you're sort of saying, here's a god idol to use for two tribal councils, I don't know if that's really worth it.
Okay. All right. Speaking of a god idol, let's take a question here and let's bring in one of our listeners. This is a different Mike has a question for you.
Hey, Robin, Mike. It's a different Mike. So this episode, we saw Davey at Ghost Island, essentially trying to talk to God, but it seemed like having that idol that only worked for one tribal kind of ended up biting him in the butt. So do you think, rather than God friending Davey, it was actually the survivor devil? Let me know what you think. Bye.
Oh, boy.
Phone, it's the phone.
It's the devil's phone.
It's the phone.
It's the phone. It's the devil's
phone.
It's the phone.
It's the phone.
It's the devil's
phone.
It's the phone.
It's the phone.
It's the devil's phone.
New phone, who dis?
Survivor Devil, is that you?
No, this is Survivor God.
Oh my lord. Oh, sorry, I did not mean to take your
obviously,
name in vain.
Obviously, not the real God. That would be sacrilegious. I am only the Survivor God. The Survivor Devil has nothing to do with Survivor David versus Goliath. He is way too busy working on next season of Survivor. This is my joint.
Wow. Wait, so is there like a different god for every like fandom? Is that how that works? So if you do like a breadth first search, is Survivor your sector?
Yes, yes. There is a different god for God-friended me, even. It's very confusing.
How old are you? 8,500 years old, Survivor God?
I'm 37 seasons old. That's very
old
in TV gods.
Oh, so you were created even like Eco Challenge God. Then turned into Survivor God.
Yes, but I have been working my entire life to bring this season of Survivor to fruition, and this is my proudest creation. Don't at me.
I mean, I would not know how to at you. You are a religious figure. This is... So all that rain, was that you speaking to the
yes.
contestants? You were communicating weather-wise? You brought the cyclone?
Yes, that I had to bring everything to this season of Survivor. I've put all of my powers and energy into making Survivor David versus Goliath the best that it could be. I've worked so hard to bring this season, and I've given you my finest creation, Angelina.
Oh, wait a minute. Is Angelina the Messiah? Is that what you're saying?
Survivor Messiah, yes. Yes, because if you read from the Survivor Bible, you see...
Also known as Boston Rob's rule book.
Yes, yes, Boston God, we call him.
Okay. Oh, that must make it confusing.
Yes. That when I created Survivor, I created all things in 6 days. And on the seventh day, I sat out. Like
wow.
Angelina.
Wow.
Yes.
So, uh-huh.
Yes.
No, go ahead, Survivor God. I supplicate before you here. You have definitely had prominence over me. You can talk.
They call me the real mayor of Slamtown up here.
Wow, that's a lofty title. Do you have the jacket to match? The robe, I should say?
Yes. You should see the jackets.
Wow. Yeah, I can imagine the jackets are... So wait, I want to go back to this whole Angelina is the Messiah thing. So
yes.
Did you what? You sent her down and you just sort of like communicated her to spread the Survivor God's will?
Yes, that is exactly what I've asked of Angelina.
I mean, that's a little unfair, isn't it? You have 19 other people out there and one is divinely in your corner. Is that not an issue in terms of fairness?
Whoever said Survivor was fair?
I guess that's very true. Have you backed any other contestants in previous seasons?
Oh, Matt Elrod.
That worked out well. Well, actually, no. Did you know he's have you been backing his Hallmark movie yes. career? I hear he's fantastic.
Yes, you should see him in Karen Kingsbury, The Bridge, Part 1 and 2. I hear it's excellent.
You're also his agent as well?
Yes, yes. But, Mike, this season, I had it all lined up for the Davids to win. But they went and they screwed it up.
Okay, yeah, I mean, they were sort of, you know, you created them and they sort of did their own actions. They bit the apple, as it were, and James Clement was not happy. I'm sure he learned well from your teaching, Survivor God.
Yes, yes, that one of my other children, Carl, the Godfather, they named him after me, the Survivor God.
Yep, that makes sense. So it wasn't a mafia thing. It was that they were referring to you.
No, that's Goodfellas. Have you seen that film?
Yes. It's all about keeping your frenemies close. That's the tagline.
Yes. God frenemied me. That's a pilot I'm working on.
Oh, okay. I didn't realize you were. Well, is the God? What? How would the God frenemy me God feel about that?
Not good. Not good. TKO God is not happy either.
Well, I hope not. TKO God might want to check his social media history.
Okay. All right, Michael, my time is short. I must go.
Well,
I tried to hook up Davey this week, and so he wouldn't vote out Nick.
Well, Survivor God, but before you lose, is there, to help this happy ending, is there something, because we have like an Abraham and Isaac thing, where like Davey threatens to sacrifice Nick. Would that appease you at all?
No. I can't control the outcome of these seasons. All I can do is put everything together and hope it works out. I'm very weak in my old age.
So you basically are building a robot and you're just letting it sort of do its own thing and see what happens.
Yes, it's not a neat problem. Too much variance.
Yeah, well, let's not bring religion into our science here. I feel like that gets complicated.
All right, Michael, keep up the good work.
Well, thank you very much. I didn't know how you feel about me, considering my unfortunate dealings with the Survivor Devil, but I'm happy to hear I'm at least on your good side, God's side.
Still hope for you, Michael.
Oh, boy. That's very good to hear. I'm soon to become a father, but I will always look up to the Almighty Father, the Godfather, if you will. Survivor God, so nice to finally hear your voice.
Yes, likewise, Michael. Thank you.
Oh, wow. Wow.
This felt rude. I wanted to give him a lozenge the entire time, but I felt like that would be sacrilegious.
The Survivor God.
Wow.
Yes, real God. The real God. That would be in very poor taste, the real God on a podcast.
So what I'm confused about, and I'm sorry I didn't ask Survivor God about this when he was on the line, but, you know, Davey said that the God walk was pointing the other way. The fire was pointing in the other direction.
Yeah.
Did he misconstrue the messaging?
I don't know. I don't know. I think that the Survivor God wanted all the Davids just to stick together. I think that was the signal that Davey had a bad plan.
Well, I think the issue is that they broke one of the Survivor commandments, which is like, you know, do not create things in my image. And when you call Carl the Godfather, that's when things fell apart for them.
Okay. Mike, I have a question for you from Edwin Johnson, who says, who from this season is going to get a room at the B&B?
Ooh, who will I let into the B&Bs? I mean, first off, apparently now I not only need to let Angelina in, actually I won't. I'll say there's no room at this inn. And put her in a nice stable we have in the back around this time of year.
I think that you may tell her there's no room, and then I think it's going to be open for debate.
Yes, exactly. It should be like, okay, look, we'll push these two twin beds together. I think she'll be able to make the room negotiation work. I feel like the mayor of Slamtown has to have a stay there.
Yeah.
I mean, I would put... I would let Natalie Cole stay there. I know how elusive she is on this podcast in the first place. But, you know, I would have her talk through the science of, I would have her play her game called, like, Boogers in My Teeth. And talk about, like, now this person, do they look like they have boogers in their teeth?
And, of course, it would be so fun to have the B&B&B.
Yes, of course. As long as I'll promise she won't do the entire podcast kneeling. I think that'll be her guarantee into the B&B.
Yes, of course. Okay, then let's see. We have a question for you from Adrian Bradford. Will Dan wear his F fake friends shirt to the finale?
Yes. For those of you that don't know, Dan Rengering has produced a line of merchandise from DanielRengering.com, and one that really tickled the fancy of Liana Boris, myself, and Akiva Winokur is a FC UK fake friends, a t-shirt that Dan made that, no joke, looks like the biggest graphical design mess I've seen in my life. It's indescribable. Rob, I know you've checked it out and you've absolutely loved it.
Yeah, it's kind of like a stick figure with a Wi-Fi signal coming out of his butt.
And also inside a random gray square that doesn't really match any color of the shirt you make.
Yeah.
I guess the question is, you know, when Crazy James was on BB9, didn't they they had him put tape over his like Mr. Clean given the finger or whatever his weird tattoo was? Would they take a big piece of gaff tape and put it over the FC UK? Is that even
sure.
Too lewd?
I'm not sure what they would do. Actually, if I could describe it again, it's kind of like a stick figure with an inkpocalypse coming out of his butt.
Oh, no. He sat on the idol. It's in my pants. Is that what Tony meant when he said he almost pooped himself? It was actually that he sat on his Tyler Perry idol and it exploded.
Yeah. No, it's just an inkpocalypse. That's all.
Yeah, that's all. It's just an inkpocalypse. You understand nowadays.
Okay. Mike, let me bring you this question. This is from Caroline in North Carolina has a question for...
I love the naming theme. We had Tori from Victoria. We have Caroline from North Carolina. This is fantastic.
Okay. Wait, you think these are fake names?
I don't know. Like, I'm coming up with names for my kid, and I don't know what I should name him. Should I name him based on the location so I always remember?
Well, what would you do?
I mean, it'd be New Jersey, so I don't know what I'd... maybe his initials would be NJ Bloom.
Yeah. We'll come back around to that one. Okay, here's Caroline.
What's up, Rob and Mike Bloom? This is Caroline calling from North Carolina. My question is, out of the final six, who would win the lip sync for your life? That's a RuPaul joke for those who don't get it. Thank you. Bye.
Mike, who would win if the final immunity challenge was a lip sync for your life?
First off, get rid of the fire-making tiebreaker. This is what I want right now. Jeffrey, bring this to me now. I want malnourished people a month and a half in a game lip syncing for their life to ancient voices.
Yeah.
Who can do the ooey 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 ahs the best?
Right. This would blow the meke out of the water, right?
Oh, absolutely. So I guess if I'm going down the line here, so Mike White has the words. He doesn't have the energy. He's like a Charlie Hides. He would stand there and just sort of stay in one place and everyone would
be able to do. In fairness, he is 85 years old.
And much like Charlie Hides was. So let's see. I feel like Allison has the height, which would allow her to do like she can do if she can do some high kicks and go into splits with those gams. That's very like Naomi Smalls. Mm-hmm. That could be something that's very delightful. Davey is my leading contender because boy has energy out the wazoo.
Yeah.
And I feel like he can go at that lip sync like a rabid freaking dog. Look, he has reveals. He can have that towel around his head like he did during the episode and have a reveal to a buff underneath that. I feel like he has the stagemanship here.
Where is Dave?
I absolutely, yeah, look, he's got the devilish Davey side to him. So
here, let's
do the
power rankings. Lip sync for your life power rankings. One is Davey. Who's two?
Two might be... I might put Angelina in there.
Yeah, I think Angelina is too. She's got the attitude.
Exactly. She could stand in one place. She could be Latrice Royale singing "You Make Me Feel Like a Natural Woman," and I'm just like pointing at you and telling you that this is the deal that I'm making. And so I feel like she can at least sell it in that regard. I might have to slot Karen in as number three.
Yeah, I think Kara is three. I agree.
I'm just not entirely sure, how exactly she would do. She seems like she'd be an adequate enough lip syncer to be able to go along with the flow. I don't know. Have any of these people done the, what is it, like the Speak Sing or whatever the new app is where people lip sync? Have any of them done that?
No.
Yeah.
I'm not sure. The bottom three will be trickier, Mike. Okay. You got Allison, Mike White, and Nick. We know that Nick and Mike can sing like cats.
Yeah. If they can do the Meow Mix theme song, I think that's basically it. I don't know how coordinated Nick is, so I'm not entirely sure if he'll be able to pull off those moves. So I feel like the rock stars are going to be in the bottom two there. I'm going to put Allison in. She's safe. She can return to the, she can go to the back of the runway.
I feel like that Mike at least has experience with music. I think I might be prone to put him at four.
I mean, sort of. He was in a movie about music. He wrote a movie about music.
I mean, it seems like he knows something about music, no?
I guess it's through osmosis. He was able to learn something about rock
music. Been around
music.
It.
Yeah, so sorry, Nick. Your Wilson Blues had us feeling blue. I'm sorry, my dear. Sashay away. Here's a nickname I can give to your mediocre lip sync skills. DOA.
Okay. And then Nick is six and Allison is five?
I put Allison in as four because I think those she's athletic enough that I think she can work the body to provide some really fun stunts. I think neither of the rock stars are able to do that, but Mike at least has like the stage presence to do some glam rock stuff like Raja.
Okay. All right. Sorry, Nick Wilson.
Sorry, Nick. You are the least adequate lip syncer, but please prove us wrong. I want to see some nice lip syncs from Nick around the holidays.
All right, Mike, you have time for a long one from Phil T.
Always here for a long one.
Okay.
Mike Blue! What is good, my guy? It is your boy, Phil T, coming to you with hat in hand. Because guess what? It's that time of year again. The final wand off is approaching, and quite honestly, I'm burnt out. I've made around 11 songs this season, and that's not a brag. That's just, sort of a point to how pathetic my life has become at this point. But that being said, like, I am absolutely out of ideas. Pineapple Boy is really slacking with the pen. Like, he's not really contributing, and I'm having trouble. And if you would be so kind as to drop the hottest Survivor freestyle of 2018 on this here podcast today. I mean, you could do it, to like a Rob mouth trumpet, or do it like acapella style spoken word, like our boy Edwin Johnson. But I could really use your help, Mike Bloom. Mixmaster Mike, please, you're our only hope. And by ours, I mean me and Pineapple Boy. We are different people. Goodbye.
Oh, boy.
All right. Mike, are you up for any of this nonsense?
All right. Here's what I can do. Let's negotiate here. What if I provide some just like random drops that he can incorporate into his song? And maybe that'll serve as like a form of inspiration.
And that is the most well laid out example of a low ball offer I've ever heard in the history of this podcast.
Listen, I know where my balls are, so I think that's adequate.
If your low ball offer is clanging into each other or being pulled apart, both are comfortable offers.
In this voicemail.
Okay, so you have some rhymes. Maybe this is more of a spoken word. Of an Edwin Johnson.
I can try some stuff. I'll throw in some sound effects there as well if they want to use that. Like, feel free to dissect and pull apart whatever you want to here.
Okay, so you are just going to put out into the public domain some drops for people.
Sure, sure. And feel free to use however you want. Probably never. But you know what? I might as well. I've been asked so kindly by the man who insists he's not a piece of fruit. So I will I will provide the resource if he wants to use them.
Can I help you? Would a dope beat help you?
A dope beat? Maybe a mouth trumpet? Just playing a melody in the background? That might inspire me.
Let's see. How about this?
Okay.
I got this.
Yes, let's do the cereal theme song.
Okay, are you ready? Okay, here is Mike Bloom's cereal.
Just random musings.
Random musings set to the cereal theme from Mike Bloom.
Solving a mystery. Who will be the 37th winner in history? Angelina has a picture with Sia. Allison did yoga, then got some diarrhea. Nick played a fake one, then a real one too. Don't forget about the one Christian found in his shoe. Size 9. Abby cried a lot. Lots of tears down her face. Mike White likes to forget about being on Amazing Race. Jeff Probst dealt with the rain and thunder too. But I'd like to kiss him on the neck, my boo. Oh boy. David versus Goliath. Big men in small. Lyrs is tiny and John Morrison's tall. Eggs in jackets, cracking like omelets. This season's sweet music like a mixtape on cassette. Take it home, Natalie. Natalie? Natalie? Nope.
Mixmaster Mike has all of the best words, except for the finale when no one says
Bird.
Well done, Mike. You've outdone yourself.
That was certainly a series of words, yeah.
With a series of words.
Oh, my God. Yeah, so feel free to use any of that in your sampling, preferably to the cereal theme.
Yes. Well done.
Thank you.
Well done again. And Mike, with that, we'll go into talking about this week in Survivor social media. Are you ready?
Always.
Okay. All right. Here is Jacob say grrr, Weinstein.
Tweets, baby, tweets, Survivor tweets. I'm sorry, Rob, with Christian gone, I just have to weep. Tweets!
Now, if they mention tweets, does that count as a bird? If they show, like, the image.
Yeah, can you give me a little bit of leeway on it, Rob? Anything around a bird? I'll take any bird imagery or bird-associated verbiage.
I don't know about that. Now, do you think they will acknowledge Alec not being there at the finale?
I don't think you would want to acknowledge that elephant in the room. I don't think they acknowledge Brain and Hans not being there.
Yeah,
or
I don't think they'll acknowledge
it.
I don't think they'll acknowledge it.
I will say, just totally tangential to this, I can understand why some people were down on this episode because, obviously of
this
the outcome.
This podcast episode?
No, well, maybe.
I understand why some people were down on this podcast episode. Yeah,
absolutely. I think at the point we got to talking about the workings of a Fijian city council, people were out the door putting on another podcast at that point, thinking about, let's see what How Stuff Works is doing this week. But I do feel like
House pregame of season 38 cast assessment.
Yeah, exactly. Oh, boy, you should check out Bernard's. Fallen Arches.
Hi, House.
So I would say that I just got that, by the way, a little late on that one. But I think that this episode, while admittedly Christian did not get his big sort of blaze of glory from the God Walk on the way out, I think that this episode did a really nice job of setting up the finale and a prospective Davey versus Nick showdown, where really we saw the two of them sort of go against each other. They didn't really make a truce. Mike was able to bring Nick over to take a shot at Christian, but now these are the only two Davids left who have directly worked against each other. I think that's going to be a major story point, at least for the first like third of the finale. So it's exciting that they set that up alongside a pretty straightforward outcome.
All season long it was David versus Goliath, but now in the end, it's David versus David.
The David was the Goliath all along.
Yeah. This was a question that we had gotten, and we're a little far down the road here, but Graham from the Bay basically wanted to know, could Davey and Nick have worked out their differences in this round and worked together?
I mean, I think that it is a matter of communication, right? I know you talked about this on your podcast slash sort of like couples counseling podcast with Val and Jeremy about how...
That was so fun.
That was so good. They work... I mean, I think having a couple on together is so much fun just because they work so well together. And you honestly just wound them up with one question. You threw that meat to them and let them sort of do a tug of war over it before returning it back to you. But they talked about this idea that I think...
Not that I knew which question in particular was going to have that effect.
Yeah, no, they were willing to just sort of talk about anything, which just makes for such a fun couple. But even though I was dismayed you did not ask Val about her, how she felt about her performance in Survivor Loved Ones.
No, I feel like such a nerd to talk about that. Because I saw her the weekend after we did it, where we played the Survivor Loved Ones season, and Val does very well in that season, no spoilers. And I I'm like, Val, I have like something really nerdy to tell you that I did. And she's like, what?
I'm surprised she
came on the podcast. I told Jeremy first. I thought he might like, but you know that he probably is like, this guy's a bigger nerd than Fishback.
Yeah. What's this dumb podcast you doing, Rob? This is so stupid. Why are you spending your time like that? Yeah. You know, there are things to do in the world. I don't even know. So you guys were talking about how, you know, I think that honestly it was like a communication breakdown. Nick, this episode, it was so interesting how I think he had been playing a pretty good game up to this point, but everything Nick did this episode was a good idea immediately followed by a bad idea. You know, good idea, make a fake idol and throw it out there so someone else will find it and the search will stop. Bad idea, you yourself finding the idol, because then you're drawing the target onto yourself. It would be like if Ozzy's like, hey, everybody, I found this stick on Exile Island. I guess I have the idol now, so don't vote for me.
Yeah.
And then the second step is, you know, good idea. Play your fake idol to, you know, suss out a reaction. I compare it to like when some people go into cities when they're from, you know, smaller towns or rural areas, they sometimes carry like a fake wallet on them. So if they get pickpocketed, their money won't get stolen. It's just like a, you know, a placeholder.
Yeah.
And Nick's essentially doing that to gauge, you know, how people would react. Bad idea. Telling them that's the reason you did that and then playing your real idol.
Yeah, I think that Nick, the plan was that he was going to come up with and find the fake idol, and then nobody was going to look for the real idol, and then he was going to go out and find the real idol then and actually have two idols. And even though there was only that was the final seven, so there's only three rounds that you could still play it, I think he felt like that, okay, if I have two idols going, and it didn't work out for James that way, but if I actually have two idols at the final seven, you know, what does it matter if they know?
Yeah, well, I think the issue though is like, that's totally fine, but you shouldn't be the one to find the idol, because then if you disappear looking for idols, like, how does that necessarily come across? Plus, if you want to get rid of Christian, placate him a bit, make him think he has an idol. That's exactly what David did with Jay.
Yeah.
Jay thought he was totally safe. Well, I think that... Go ahead.
Yeah, that, I mean, with David and Jay, you know, that they got lucky that they put the idol right where Jay was going to find it and then felt like that he had it. And I think that maybe Nick was most afraid that Christian was going to go find the idol. And so Christian said in his exit interview that Nick brought him over to the raft, and then he just like the horse was at the water, but he wasn't drinking. And that Christian was like, I don't think it's in the raft, because when Ben found the idol on the raft, it was like marked. And so then I think then Davey just had, or sorry, that Nick had to just act as if like, oh, look what I found, because Christian wasn't taking the bait. It was like a Christian trap, and Christian wasn't looking for the idol there.
Could Nick have made a deal with the fake idol? Could he have said like, I'll give it to you if you want to use this at the next tribal council?
He's like making a deal with the actual idol.
Jeff, with the inanimate object. I will give you this idol for more rice.
Hey, idol, come here. All right, we need a nickname. You're a fake idol. I'm Nick.
I'm American. You're an idol. Let's call ourselves American Idol. And we'll sing our way into the all final right. three.
Seacrest out.
But what he doesn't know is he's totally the Dunkelman. So many Fox references between that and House on this podcast. It's become the big of this episode.
So I hear, here's a neat problem. You've got an alliance, American Idol. Have you ever had a Reuben stuttered?
Have you ever had a macaroon? Are your knees Clay Aiken at this point from standing on a perch for 6 hours? Or is your game in Kimberly Lock?
Okay. All right. Let's talk about these survivors on social media. Davey Rickenbacker, I tweet Davey. He said, Ayo, God, I gave you a shout out on at Survivor CBS last night. Keep looking out for your boy.
Oh, boy. Well, I think this is a little awkward considering what Survivor God disapproved of what Davey was doing.
I didn't like that. Lyrsa.
Ooh.
Lyrsa tweeted out. She said, I love any challenge that involves balls. I almost peed my pants when Jeff said, Davey's balls are starting to separate. I guess Mike had the best balls yesterday.
Knock, knock.
Well, I mean, look, Lyrsa knows her way around some huevos, considering her expertise, so I think it makes sense.
Excuse me?
I mean, she would have been the one who, if she was participating in that challenge, Jeff would have broke her, it seems. She would have peed her pants right there.
Yeah. T-Bird, she said.
Yes!
You don't get a point today, Mike.
No, damn it!
She tweeted, I'm going to need a moment. My guy at Yubiki being voted out tonight. Hashtag bummed in a big way. Hashtag survivor.
I realized in this season that of all these Survivor tweeters, T-Bird is basically the Robin Williams of the Survivor community.
How so?
Because you can just wind her up and she'll just keep talking. Like, about anything, really. She doesn't need an audience. She's just T-Bird.
Golf is such a manly sport. You can dress like a pimp, and no one would care where you whack the ball and you get in the car. And that reminds me, I need to get my tires changed tomorrow. Also, shout out to my social media hater turned fan, Lick My Butt 3, whose wedding I'm officiating next week.
So you feel like Robin Williams, she could do like an hour just improv.
I think so. I think that's what your podcasts are, Rob. It's just T-Bird riffing for an hour and a half.
And what is this?
I don't know what this is. This is just pure nonsense.
What's your point with that?
Okay. Brian Corden said, among the many tremendous additions at Cihubiki brings to the Survivor canon, the affirmation of Guatemala's existence is truly his greatest. On behalf of our cast, we humbly thank you, sir.
Everyone's doing the pancakes since Christian talked about Survivor Guatemala.
Yeah, what did Christian say about, how did he acknowledge Survivor Guatemala?
I can't even remember. Maybe he acted like a howler monkey. He talked about...
No, you know what I think he did in one of the exit interviews, I don't have it in front of me, that he mentioned, when he talked about the number of votes that he got, that he talked about how just certain things that he... I think he was asked about Laura Moret coming back into the game to have 19 votes, and he talked about how there were other factors, like how Gary Hogaboom was going to have votes cast against him, but he played his idol before the vote.
Oh, I thought he was talking about the time he ate a cursed chicken that the Survivor God put a hex on.
Yeah, not a neat problem, eating a cursed chicken.
Yeah, okay. Exactly. That's why Angelina is, again, so devout. She does not eat the cursed chickens.
Yes, yes.
The chicken has flown the coop.
Okay, here we go. Principal Randy Bailey tweeted... I can't wait until the finale of Survivor David versus Goliath on Wednesday night on CBS. Given this final six, I predict at Christian Hubicki's girlfriend Emily gets more airtime than the winner.
Emily!
Yeah, I think at a certain watch party, she'll get more screen time, especially if she's wearing tiger print in the audience.
That wasn't tiger print. It was a fish print.
I don't know. Was it a bird print? Does that count?
Nope.
If someone wears a bird on their shirt, can we count that?
No.
Oh, darn it.
No. Okay. All right. Eric Reichenbach had the same thought as you, Mike, that he said, I bet hashtag revenge rice tastes just like season 26 Hans meltdown rice.
Oh, boy. Yes. And I can imagine what people were going to do to redecorate the shelter is similar to what Brandon Hans would do as well.
Okay. Bryce Isaiah, that he was so great last week on the feedback show. So many people enjoyed that one, including the people over at International Delight Coffee Creamer.
Oh boy, yeah, I think we're past the opportunities to get any sort of sponsors on this particular podcast, Rob.
Yeah, I think so.
Plus the show House wants to sponsor us after the fact. If Hugh Laurie wants to join the BNB, I'm more than welcome to have him on.
That he tweeted out, "Woo child, C-H-I-L-D, okay, not
okay." So it's no Chile, baby back ribs.
Woo child, we getting close to the end. Who's excited about tonight's Survivor David versus Goliath? Real quick, what's the name of at iTweetDavy and at KY Nick Wilson's Alliance? Eggplant emoji asking for a friend. Hashtag Survivor.
I think, you know, Bryce was fantastic last week, but he would have been great this week as well, because this week, Rob, we had a dick duel. The two were against each other. This is a magnanimous occasion.
Were they clanging together or going separate?
They clanged together and then they separated, which, again, your mileage may vary as to which ones you would rather have, but they were lots of swords were crossing.
Then you're boned.
All right, Alexis Maxwell tweeted about 18 times. Mike, do you have time for a quick brand steal of Alexis Maxwell's 18 tweets?
Ooh, yeah.
We'll load them into the Survivor Kagyan brand steal real quick.
Who's your winner pick?
Okay, it came down to a final three between I'd gamble for sure. No one told her they would owe her a favor for stepping down to get rice, so she shouldn't expect anything in return. And Nick shares the right info at the right time to win back friends.
Ooh, I feel like, I don't know, I feel like the I would gamble like comes across as a certain gumption. So I feel like if it was a nine person it was a final two. So I think she won that one. Won what? Let's say let's say 5-4. It was a okay. Close vote.
The merge boot was at Jeff Probst. There should be a YouTube series that lets people just compete in the old individual immunity challenges to win a lump sum of cash.
That's an interesting idea. So they would basically like just bring back, like have a little special where survivors come back and just compete in a bunch of challenges for money.
Yeah, what is that?
I don't know. Is it like a sort of like the celebrity poker tournaments? They just sort of like bring everyone together for like a fun occasion.
All right. This is Survivor Challenge Special. We've got all of the challenge beasts here together for one day. The winner gets 10 grand. All right.
It's very similar, again, not going back to RuPaul's Drag Race, but they did a Hollis Slay Spectacular where, spoiler alert, turned out everybody won in the end. So I feel like a similar thing might happen if you if you put all the challenge beasts together.
Well, one more Alexis Maxwell tweet. This one went out at the final five on the Brandt Steel. Oh my glob. Christian is going home? Wow. Great move by Mike. An amazing season for Christian. He definitely would have won it all. I'm such a Christian fan. Hashtag Survivor.
Oh my glob.
Oh my glob.
Is that like people who sort of like are Survivor God agnostic or atheist? Do they worship the glob instead? And actually, I believe that the one who went out in Alexis Maxwell's spot was, why is this commercial break so long, GD? She got voted out for complaining too much.
Yeah. Okay. Oh my glob. All right. Let's see. What else? Brendan Shapiro.
Our gym teacher at Survivor.
Our gym teacher.
Elementary, middle, high school.
Yeah. He's got to get in on the Survivor Ghost Islanders coming in and just
really... self-flagellation of Survivor Ghost Island. Just constantly. Twitter, they're just whipping each other with tweets as to, like, God, our season, our horrible season.
Yes. He tweeted, I'm aware of the trap of recency bias, but when the dust is settled years from now, hashtag Survivor David versus Goliath will still be considered an all-time great season. From casting to production to editing, it's the bee's knees. That's B-E-E apostrophe S knees.
Oh, thank goodness. Look, he knows about, you know, physical ability the most. So I think it would be a low blow to go after something that happened all the way back in episode.
My question is, what was that a jab at Bean Nguyen?
I do not believe so. I just think Brendan Shapiro is too good-hearted to do that.
He just uses the phrase bee's knees unironically.
Yeah, he's older. I'm assuming he uses all the people in the 40s.
I mean, he's
phrases,
not
like,
that old, Mike.
The bee's knees, 23 skidoo, half
23 skidoo? Is that a new DNA test?
Yes, we tell you what Depression era Hoovervillian you're related to.
Yeah. Do they tell you anything about cilantro?
Yeah, they tell you if you had an affinity or lack thereof towards broths with a sock in it, because that's all they can make back in the day.
Okay. Let me see if I have anything else here for you, Mike, in the social media. I think.
Dude, has anyone talked about the voting blocks?
You mean on Survivor?
Well, no, I mean, like, because I feel like every time voting blocks are mentioned, someone's like, well, actually, it comes from this thing. And you said that, like, you actually don't feel like this is voting block. So I feel like every time the word is thrown out there on Survivor, it sort of stirs up a maelstrom amongst players.
Yeah, Stephen Fishback did tweet, voting blocks, the game is fluid, and it's all based on voting blocks, and then a heart emoji.
I actually think that I kind of want to find a different term, or I might want to go like a bit to the homophones, because I feel like what you're referring to with voting blocks is BOLCS, right? This idea of like two people and three people come together.
I think this is controversial. I think that people say it's BLOCS.
Yeah, so like I feel like that's referring to like what your definition is, right? Of like two people coming together and then three people having a separate alliance, and they all just sort of come together in different configurations. What this feels more like is voting blocks, BLOCKS.
Yes,
where it's like each person is an individual
preventing the other
block.
Person from voting.
No, that just
with
that
the idle
one time.
Nullifier. Yeah, and stealing
but
votes.
Basically, everyone's an individual block, and what you do every round is you knock the blocks over and you build them up in different configurations. So it's less more about associative things where people are moving in groups, and it's more so about each and every person is a brick and you're building the wall a different way every time.
Okay. Sure, we'll go with that.
So I guess it technically is voting blocks, but just by a different definition or spelling of it.
Yeah. Nick Majorano said you have to be a great ball handler to win this challenge, but he said he did win this challenge. He said in Ko Rong the balls were the same but my disc was much smaller.
Yeah, well, it's just surprising because it's very hot out there. You'd imagine in a colder climate it would be a lot smaller.
Yeah. They were out there in the middle of Ko Rong. They didn't eat all that heat, I've heard.
Yeah. Too much heat.
Wait, I think that is just about it. Oh, wait, hold on. I have one other thing, I guess.
Tweets, baby, tweets, Rupert tweets. Woo! The bets on something that happened on Survivor. Rupert tweets.
All right, Mike, it is the last feedback show of the season. And so I do have a special treat for you because Rupert Boneham was back live tweeting this week's edition of Survivor. And of course, that he is still locked out from the actual Rupert Boneham account and has to be broadcasting. This would be like if I lost the password to Rob Has a Podcast and couldn't upload the podcast and then just like all the show. I have to just like I'll be on reality TV wrap ups from here on out.
Yeah, exactly. Or like I'll start up my new thing. Rob talks a lot. They just please go there for all the content.
Yeah. New phone, who dis? This is at Rupert's Kids with the live tweets. Okay, so what I have for you are three real tweets from at Rupert's Kids, and then one Boston Rob tweet.
Whoa, Boston God got into this.
Yes. Okay, so it's a season 8 All-Stars feel where we have three tweets from Rupert and one tweet from Boston Rob. Okay.
Okay.
All right, here we go. First tweet.
That was a great at Survivor CBS Tribal Council.
That's one. Number two.
Man, at Survivor CBS is good.
That's with five O's.
Okay.
Multiple O's. Okay. When I look at those five O's, I just think about like what would happen if they were clanging together like that thing that's on my desk.
Yeah, because then if you separate them, you get goo and ud, so you don't want them separated.
Number three.
The ultimate transformation is from camp to tribal council. A shower, fresh clothes, and food makes you a different person.
Wait, do they get clothes and showered on their way to tribal council, or are you talking about going to jury?
Yeah,
that's a good point.
And number four,
it's amazing how dirty someone gets out there. A shower makes someone look totally different.
Wait, was there a shower in this episode?
No, they went to the Mala Mala Beach Club, but all they did was eat meat. Yeah, they didn't do anything else.
Was it a spa reward?
No, I don't think so. I don't think we got a spa reward, which I'm sure they were craving for because they were all really dirty after that challenge. But yeah, I'm pretty sure it was just like an all-you-can-eat meat buffet, and that was it at the Mala Mala Beach Club. So I don't know why. See, one of those has to be Rupert. So Rupert at least once talked about showering, which does not exist in this episode. Let's see. Okay. Just for effect, can you read these four in a Boston Rob voice as well? I just want to get the timbre in.
Okay, real quick.
That was a great at Survivor CBS Tribal Council.
Okay.
Man, at Survivor CBS is good.
Number three,
the ultimate transformation is from camp to tribal council. A shower, fresh clothes, and food makes you a different person.
Number four,
it's amazing how dirty you get out there sometimes. A shower makes someone look totally different.
Okay, so here's my thoughts. Three and four seem to unintentionally reference the process of going to jury and coming back well clean, well shaved. Boston Rob has never been on a Survivor jury, so he can't speak to that experience specifically. So I don't think he would talk about that.
Hmm.
So comes down to one and two for me. And I don't know if Boston Rob would be someone to type good. That feels much more like a Rupert thing. So I'll go with my gut here and hope that the raps I had are going to, you know, help me with it. I'm going to say that number one is the Boston Rob tweet.
Okay.
No pumpkin, no.
Sorry.
Do I lose my vote now on the Survivor Supreme Court? I played the game and I lost. I should have just walked away.
Yes. Now you lost your vote. Okay. Do you have a second guess?
I'll go with number two then.
Yes.
Nice. So close. So close. Give me that binger, that ding. Wow. I can't believe that Boston Rob went for the so like the teen girl squad. So good.
Yeah. But I do feel like that is how Amber talks. So I feel like that together that maybe, you know, you pick up things from each other.
Do they have a joint account that Amber tweets from sometimes?
I've seen that on Facebook sometimes. Yeah. So maybe you just like you pick up things from each other. OK. All right. Mike Bloom type on Twitter. Aren't you glad we got those plugs out in front?
Yes, absolutely. Because I don't think anyone's around by the end of this nonsense. If you are, we thank you. We're doing the exact opposite of Allison looking at your charts and complimenting you profusely for sitting through all this malarkey. And thank you as always for having me on, Rob. I mean,
it's a pleasure.
I feel like I say this like every season, but this really does feel like overall your best season of Survivor coverage, just between the guests, the Wiggle Room. Hopefully we contributed in some fashion on the B&B,
which I think was our best.
Yeah, I think it was our best season yet as well. And we have your friend Eric Stein on next week, which maybe he'll admonish me for the word draft after you guys did it on the Summer of Stein.
Oof, he said.
Yeah, this past summer. So it's been a super great season of podcasts about a super great season. And I'm glad we ended on a very weird note, as hopefully this season will, when Angelina wins and I get a bird tattoo to commemorate the occasion.
Yeah, that'll be great. That'll be very exciting. Of course, be on the lookout for the B&B this week without Mike Bloom.
Yes, Aman and Pooya Ramathiana. I actually think when we're recording this, it's actually posted. So, it was a really good time. I'm excited to get back with Liana. We'll get back for more Drag Race, for more Top Chef, and yes, I'm sure some more insane stuff moving forward with Celebrity Big Brother, and then, of course, Survivor 38 and Survivor Devil Incarnate around the corner.
Okay. All right. So, we've got still so much coming up here. We're going to get to the Wiggle Room over the weekend. That movie that Survivor God mentioned about Wyatt Nash starring in a Hallmark holiday film, that sounds pretty good. I'm gonna have to watch that. Maybe I might get a podcast in talking about that. That sounds really good.
Oh, yeah. I mean, you are building a bridge between yourself and the Hallmark Movie Podcast with whatever her name is, Catherine Newsom, The Bridge Part 1 and 2.
Karen Kingsbury, The Bridge Part 1 and 2 on the Hallmark Channel.
Yes, of course. And really, that was a slip of the tongue on my part.
Yeah. So we'll be on the lookout for that, of course. Then I've got even some bonus coverage, perhaps, still on the way for everybody. And then I will be live after the Survivor finale with Dom Abate and Chrissy Hofbeck. Very excited. Stephen Fishbeck will be honeymooning.
Yes, he'll be going to the Mala Mala Beach Resort and just eat meat for the next 7 days.
Is that where he's going?
I don't have no idea, but I'm actually very excited for you to have, and I will give all the credit in the world to Dom and Chrissy as well, considering that I think, you know, they are a year and also 6 months away from, like, admittedly pretty crushing defeats on public television. And I can imagine, and any other type of Survivor players would understandably say, I'm going to step away and not really, you know, get my focus talk that much about Survivor. I'll wait a little while. But these two have such a love for the game that they're willing to dive into it. And they also have such differing perspectives as well that I'm really excited to listen. It's going to be a really fun time.
Should be fun. Looking forward to that. And then we'll have finale interviews as well. And then we will wrap everything up with Josh Wiggler coming up and maybe even some more fun along the way. So be on the lookout for all that. Mike, do we have a hashtag for the wonderful people that made it this far?
Oh, boy. We got, I think Inkpocalypse is up there. Can we do hashtag bird is the word? That might be a good one.
Bird is the word. Okay. Sure.
The actual idea
of Davey going back to the camp with fluorescent ink all over himself does crack me up more. Bird is the word is fun as well.
Yeah, so we shall see, and we're all praying to the Survivor God that someone mentions Bird at least once, so I can go another one of these drafts with victorious. I don't know if it'll happen, but you know what? I'm hoping to be surprised in a myriad of ways. Yes. Come this Wednesday.
Do you have a gift basket that you would offer up to any Survivor contestant that would get the word bird out there for you?
Yes, absolutely. It will include, don't have a lot of physical things I can provide. How about this? Any player who wins can name my son. That's a good gift basket, isn't it?
Are you rooting for people to not vote for Angelina to avoid the Survivor tattoo?
Yeah, this is a really, like, damned if I do, damned if I don't. In a perfect world, everyone would be saying bird up the wazoo, but not voting for Angelina. But if Angelina, you know, wins, we all win. Except I go through a lot of pain getting a tattoo, but it's still, you know, it's for a good cause.
Yeah. Okay. All right. Mike Bloom, did we forget anything?
I cannot imagine. We have combed through this episode and everything around
should
it.
We should hope not.
I can only imagine. Thank you again for having me on. I'm really intrigued to see how people react to this one.
I had a lot of fun. I don't know if anybody else did.
Yeah, same. And Survivor God had a lot of fun. And if someone in his old age can enjoy our malarkey, you know, why not someone else?
Yes. All right. Mike, thank you so much. Thank you, everybody that made it this far. We appreciate you, of course. Thanks again to the patrons of Robin's Podcast, who hopefully are not questioning their decisions to help fund all of this nonsense. To find out more about the benefits of becoming a patron of Robin's Podcast, go to robhasawebsite.com/patron. Take care, everybody. Have a good one. Bye.